TGIF, huh? TGIF. Thank God it's Friday, because that means it's Pat Day. Rick Smith is off playing. He's skipping through the tulip somewhere or having some other sort of fun. Actually, I don't know what he does with these Fridays. Very curious. I would go find out, but I'm busy warming his chair. This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show. Welcome. Happy Friday night. Getting ready for your weekend. Have you already started your weekend? Have you loosened your tongue? 1-888-520-7425 if you want to give us a call. Remember that Brett is quick with his finger in case your tongue gets too loose somewhere during the conversation. But if you want to talk about anything that's happened in the last couple of weeks, I've been off for 2 weeks. I was up in Maine last week at a family gathering. But I'm back, and I know nothing about what's going on. So this is going to be an interesting program. I have been working on the book. The book is titled, Daddy, What's a Middle Class? And it's the book about our trip around the country trying, as Rick and Carol try to teach their kids, something about a country they can be proud to live in, a country that they can be proud to call home. And in the meantime, they dragged along producer Brett and myself to, I don't know, I've thought for a while that they were just going to make us run behind the RV to make sure the kids got in. Oh, no, they're coming! Attack of Brett and Pat. But anyway, the book is coming along. It's starting to have chapters and exist in reality. So, Daddy, what's a middle class? We'll be out this fall. Depending on getting it all designed. Perfect Christmas gift, let's put it that way. Tonight we've got a pretty good show lined up. We have all kind of, the stuff I did know about that's happening in current events, and then of course Brett, because he pays attention. Our first guest, Susan Spicker, will be on. She's a mom from Franklin County, and she's going to help us understand how Pennsylvania funds schools. No, nobody can do that. But she is going to help us to get a handle on what's been going on. Special treatment for some school departments, Philadelphia really basically being blasted back to pre-revolution times, why should we educate anybody's child kind of attitude going on in Philly. And then what's going on everywhere else. Certainly the stimulus money that built the solar array in Carlisle, at the Carlisle school system, I'm certain that the superintendent over that way is pretty darn happy that they can sell those pollution credits. I hate that, by the way. I hate that we have systems that improve our environmental impact and then allow that to be sold to bad guys so that they can continue to destroy the environment. But in the meantime, that is something that is fluffing up the coffers in Carlisle so that the bills get paid a little better in that school system. We're also going to talk tonight to Kay Tillo. She's the coordinator of All Unions Committee for Single Payer. Patriot Coal has struck a deal where they're financing the retirements for the coal miners there. But, you know, quite frankly, they're like, yeah, well, we're going to do it, but you guys don't want to get sick in about 10 years because we aren't going to be able to pay to make sure you still have health insurance. So we're going to negotiate it for now, but all we've done is moved the trapdoor further down the building. You're going to end up walking into that trapdoor eventually. And, of course, if we had single-payer universal health care, we wouldn't have to worry about that. Medicare for All, H.R. 676, Congressman Conyers' perennial proposal. We're going to speak with Amanda Cost tonight, too. She's an advocate for victims of domestic violence. I, you know, domestic violence is an awful topic, and, you know, we don't talk about it enough. Everybody wants to forget about it, want to pretend it happens in somebody else's neighborhood. We want to pretend that only poor people get violent, you know, get frustrated, but, you know, it happens in every socioeconomic reality. And Amanda's going to chat with us about it because I'm absolutely just shocked that this happened. A New Hampshire man on a supervised visit with his son killed him. You do that at a supervised visit. Does anybody even think of saying, hey, you don't empty your pocket? So what happens to a supervised visit? How does this happen? And will different precautions be being taken? We're going to chat with Steve Kramer, a whiz on computer science stuff, and we're going to talk about NSA spying. You know, I've been working, researching this book, and I've been working on the book, and I got to tell you, spying, nothing new. The NSA, I'm like, that is just so, Ma Bell telephone operator. It turns out that when the Blair prior to the Blair Mountain Uprising, the coal miner strike that ended up causing the Blair Mountain Massacre, the phone operators were friends of the coal companies, and you know how they'd be like, hi, Betsy, can you get me Bill over there at whatever and in the next town over, and the operator would connect you? Those operators listened in and then called the coal companies and ratted out the people who were organizing. So, you know, NSA, sorry, nothing new. New technology, that's all. We're also going to talk about ballot access in the state of Pennsylvania as well as nationwide. There is some movement in the Pennsylvania legislature about having better ballot access for third parties. Possibly the only hope this country has is breaking the stranglehold that the Democrats and the Republicans have on our system. That's my opinion, but also happens to be the truth. You know, I don't know how many people, even Democrats and Republicans now, who say, you know, I voted for that guy, I don't know what the heck happened because he's not doing any of the stuff he was talking about. And I'm not just talking about maybe the president or whomever you have in your mind. Anybody gets elected, they get in there, and the special interests that gave them the money, they, you know, they bend them. So ballot access law is really important. We're going to talk to Carl Romanelli. Carl, a Green Party candidate who ran, I believe, for Pennsylvania, United States Senate for Pennsylvania, and got fined for doing it, got punished by the states of Pennsylvania for using his ballot access to actually have the audacity and the nerve to run a campaign, run for office. That's just appalling. We'll have Carl explain some of that and also what's going on now with in the Commonwealth, in the legislature over there, the Commonwealth to change some of that. Richard Winger is the national, just the guy just runs and keeps track of ballot access all across the nation. And for those of you who don't know, I ran for Vice President of the United States in 2004. And that's pretty much what we spent all of our time doing, myself and David Cobb, who ran for president. We went from state to state, jumping through the hoops of ballot access to make sure that the campaign ended up on the ballot. And if you are grateful that the Ohio recount happened in 2004, there were a lot of us who felt that hinky stuff was going on in the state of Ohio. What was his name? That cretin who was the Secretary of State in Ohio, I can't remember his name right now. He then turned around later and ran for governor of Ohio and was spanked by the voters. But he was the man who told the president, don't worry, you've got Ohio, I'll deliver Ohio, I'll make sure you win it. And he did. He cheated in Ohio, and we did the recount, David Cobb and I, and the Libertarian candidates, Campagna and Badnarik, we launched a recount of the state of Ohio, which, oh, by the way, you can't do unless you're a presidential or vice presidential candidate. And because of that, the little old black lady who was not allowed to vote had a chance to stick up for herself because she didn't have a right, according to the laws of Ohio, to say, I waited in line 8 hours and when I got out of line to go to the bathroom, they wouldn't let me back in line so that I could vote. Or the 8,000 votes that were thrown out because the paperweight was wrong. You know, it's important to have third parties on the ballot. First of all, it'd be nice if they could win. But second of all, it's just nice to have somebody there that cares about liberty because John Kerry wasn't going to do it. That's for sure. He wasn't going to fight back. And then last but not least coming up, Peter Neils and Greg Mello will be on the show this evening. They're from the Los Alamos Study Group, and it turns out that a third of our nuclear weapons, according to the United States Air Force story about the United States Air Force, a third of them are unsecure. I don't mean they're insecure, like they're afraid they don't look good when they see each other in the mirror. No, no, they're unsecure. We have a third of our nuclear weapons, and by the way, that's like enough to blow up the world 7 times. A third of our nuclear weapons, the United States Air Force says, not in good shape, not sure that we could be in control of them. So that's kind of frightening, and we'll get a handle on that. What happened was there are low-level units that are in charge of what happens when we have to use our nuclear weapons. You know, by low-level, I mean members of the United States Air Force that are not high in seniority. It's very low-level groups, and so it turns out that one of these groups fumbled an exercise. Now, they won't tell us what exercise. All this stuff is protected. It does operate, though, one-third of the nation's land-based nuclear missiles, and this unit failed safety and security inspections. It's not good. And, of course, we're going to take your phone calls, too. 888-520-7425. 888-520-RICK. If you want to talk about something, and like I said, I'm completely out of it when it comes to what's going on in the last couple of weeks here. So bring me up to speed. I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith, and we'll be back with a little bit more. Come right up.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It stopped the flight to the charter schools because we have something to offer that the charter schools don't offer.
Julie Sellers, president of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers, talking about the learning center model of public education that educators from around the country are looking to as a model for public education success.
They're called community learning centers, and each school has a resource coordinator. They do a strong community engagement with parents, community, business people, and they bring in all of the resources that students of poverty would need to overcome some of the problems that they face in their day-to-day lives so that they are able to be successful in school.
The learning centers were made possible by $1 billion bonding approved by voters in Cincinnati that rebuilt all the public schools in the city. Sellers says this model recognizes the challenges poor students face, helping them while at the same time preserving a voice on the job for teachers. The House Majority Whip has become the number one target of immigration reform advocates. Jesse Russell reports.
Hundreds of immigration reform advocates descended on Bakersfield, California, Wednesday to put pressure on U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy to push for reform in the House of Representatives. McCarthy has become a primary target of the reform movement due to his position as Republican House Whip. In the past, he said he doesn't support a path to citizenship, but advocates believe he is vulnerable to persuasion due to his congressional district being 35% Latino. Service Employees International Union Secretary Treasurer Eliseo Medina spoke at the rally.
You know that this immigration system only results in more people dying in the desert.
That's right.
It results in more families being split apart by deportation. And it results in more crops rotting in the fields because there aren't enough workers. And it results in a lot of pain and suffering for our community and for our country.
In June, the Senate passed a comprehensive reform bill with a vote of 68-32. However, the legislation is stalled in the House.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is fighting efforts by the government to block the merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. The union says that in the name of encouraging competition, the Department of Justice risks destroying the only merger that has a chance of competing with other big airlines in order to protect consumers. The union says the airline merger the government wants to block promises new opportunities for airline workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We need to cut the waste so we can keep taxes down and make sure we have money for critical programs that help our families and our seniors.
Oh, Governor Corbett, we've got to cut this. What were we cutting? I couldn't understand that. What did you want to cut so that we could keep essential? And what is an essential? What is an essential service to the governor? Essential and service are like oxymoron words when they're used together, because a service is something that seems like, oh, it's a little something you got on the side, but an essential is something, oh, my God, I must have. And education, possibly the most essential thing going, and it has the best reward. They did a study on the GI Bill. It provided more money on taxpayer investment because when you take a butcher and you turn him into a doctor, like the GI Bill did to my dad, a butcher at the Piggly Wiggly, becomes the chief of medicine at a major northeastern hospital, You tax him, you get a lot more money. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, we are now going to talk about something that is defies definition, so I'm excited that Susan Spick is here to help me, and that's how we pay for education in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, one of only three states in the United States that doesn't have a formula for paying for our children's education. Susan Spick, you're a mom from Franklin County. Can you explain this to me?
You know, thanks for having me on, and I really can't explain it to you other than to say that when Governor Corbett came into office, there was a formula that was being used to distribute dollars in a transparent, fair, and accurate way to all of our school systems.
Well, that had to go.
Well, you know, as soon as he came in, that went, that left, and then he was able to, you know, distribute the cuts in ways that were incredibly unfair. So when he cut that $1 billion from funding our public schools, the deepest cuts went to the poorest districts, first of all. And then as they have been adding money back in, you know, to barely, I mean, like they cut $1 billion, they've restored barely 13% of that in the past three budgets. But they just kind of can do it however they want.
Okay, so I'm looking at a story that, God love Brett, I love Brett. Brett found for me, because I've had my nose writing this book about our trip, and I don't know anything that happened in the last 3 weeks. But the Lancaster Online story says that literally 20 or so school districts were cherry-picked to get millions of dollars.
You know, they were cherry-picked. They were cherry-picked late at night in the Capitol.
Hard to pick cherries late at night.
Yeah, it is. They managed to do it in Harrisburg, though. Like, everything that happens up there, it's behind closed doors. It's late at night. It's right at the end when nobody's paying attention and they pass the budget. And then all of a sudden, it's a done deal. And, you know, when it's legislative leaders who are getting this special bonus funding for their school districts, it really should raise a lot of red flags to taxpayers around Pennsylvania.
Now, there are lawsuits about this. So Pedro Rivera, the Lancaster school superintendent, who said that he, in fact, learned about the $2.4 million bonus he was getting for his school department in the newspaper. He shouldn't spend that money, because hopefully this money will be sucked back in and redistributed. And maybe he gets it back, but it needs to go fairly.
Right, it needs to go fairly. And you know, and I don't begrudge any of these school districts the money they got this year. I think if they got it, it's fair and square. The school district should spend it. It's not the school district's fault.
Right.
It is the state legislature's fault. And they are legislators. You know, these guys, with one senator gave $8 million to a school district, a bonus, and then nothing to the rest of the school districts that he represents. And I wonder how his constituents would feel about that.
Will his constituents know?
I guess that's the question, and that's the great challenge that we have as public education advocates, is talking to people in really plain-spoken language about how these decisions in Harrisburg make a difference to us and our children and to our pocketbooks, because when your district doesn't get $8 million in bonus funding, your property taxes are going to go up.
Right, or your kid's going to come home with absolutely you know, no teacher for half of a day or something. Now, if I'm asking you questions that you don't feel comfortable with, just tell me, because literally, I'm telling you what, I know nothing. And I'm not proud of that, but it's just real.
Uh-huh.
They're going to half-day kindergarten now in different school departments as well?
Yeah, and so I'm most familiar with the mid-state, and so in East Pennsboro, which is a district in Cumberland County, the school district had to cut their full-day kindergarten to half-day kindergarten. And I think that that's something that's looming for a lot of districts around the state. And, you know, when you look at investing dollars in children when they're very young, before they've developed problems, when their brains are still forming and you can really get a lot of good information into them, is a great investment. It pays off in the long run. You head off a lot of problems later on. And so for school districts to be forced to cut full day to half day kindergarten right now is just, it's bad policy.
Susan, I do an awful lot of anecdotal stuff, and I don't think my life is very different from anybody else's, you know. So when I talk about my life, I think, well, it's probably just like everybody else's. But when I was a young single mom, because for obvious reasons, my husband left me. And so we lived in this one school department, and I had to move because I couldn't afford the rent there anymore. So we moved to another school department, and my kids were put in a combined classroom. So it wasn't just, I mean, this is like kindergarten, first and second graders all in one little classroom. And all of a sudden, you know, it was almost like education came to a halt. I was working two jobs. I was still reading to my kids at night. I'm college educated. I did what I could. When I got a better job and I moved back to the town where my mom lived and where I wanted to live, my kids were behind. Mm-hmm. So it does matter. You can't say, oh, well, the parents will take care of it, because it does matter. You can have a well-educated mom who's working real hard, and even though she's reading to her kids every night, she can't make up the gaps of a system that's not working on the regular day that that kid is supposed to be in school.
No, and it makes it harder for parents to work. So if you are expecting full-day kindergarten, and if you're a mom and you've stayed home and you're getting ready to go back to work and suddenly you find out it's half-day kindergarten, you know, it economically it's hard for families, because you can't go back to work. And then also there's just this whole idea that, you know, it's great to go to a half day of kindergarten. It's better than nothing, but talk to a kindergarten teacher about what it takes to get kindergartners in that fall semester, get them in, get them settled, get them into a routine, and then they go home. And so really, like, very little can even take place in that half day.
Well, plus they're not saying, okay, the teachers only work half time now. What they're giving the teachers is twice as many kindergartners, and they're going to have half as many teachers.
Yep, exactly.
So that poor teacher who has just had to, and by the way, if you're a kindergarten teacher, you don't ever go to the bathroom. because you can't leave, you know, 15 little kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so their lives, just kidney failure alone, it should make them a special category of teacher. But so you're going to have a whole class of kids in the morning, and you're going to do everything you can to, and then a whole different crowd of kids is going to come in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's just preposterous.
Yeah, and when you've got really successful full-day kindergarten classes in place, then the first grade classes are aligned to what children have learned in full-day kindergarten, which is more than they learn in half-day kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden you're going to go to half-day kindergarten. These kids aren't going to be prepared for the curriculum that the first grade teacher has been teaching, because they will have had half as much time in school. So, like, there is a really huge ripple effect throughout the entire school district by having it being forced, because of state budget cuts and because of a lack of a funding formula and, you know, enormous charter school overpayments that school districts are mandated to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be this way. It actually could be very simple if our legislators would just decide that they are going to do their job. Like, they passed this budget. They said, woohoo, we passed our budget. They went on their 2.5-month vacation, and they left this undone. They left schools closing around the state. They left kids with no music, no art, no guidance counselors. They left huge property tax bills for people, and they said, we did our job. You know, they didn't do their job.
Well, I got an idea. Let's have some field trips and bring the kids to these people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just, every mom who and dad who've got the time, load up a bunch of the kids and bring them to the legislators' houses.
Yep. I think a legislator who has said, well, you know, Philly doesn't need any more money, if you talk to a kid from the Philadelphia school district, you'd have a different perspective, but they don't have the courage to actually go into a building in Philadelphia and see what their ideology has wrought on the children in that district. They don't have that courage. That it's fine to just talk about it like it's some abstract, but if they actually have to face the children who are bearing the brunt of what their decisions are, I think it would be a different story. But
well, even like Head Start, all the cuts to Head Start nationally and stuff. What is it? $1 of Head Start to $8 saved in the criminal justice system.
Yep.
And aside from the human toll of having a person grow up to be, you know, a self-assured, rewarding part of the community instead of a convict, you know, aside from that personal toll, it's just financially stupid.
Yeah, it is, you know, like, if you can head off a lot of these problems when children are super, super young, like, even in really good early childhood education programs, you know, not, you know, what people call daycare, but we call early childhood education, which is what it really is. If you fund those properly and you give children opportunities when they're little to learn what they need to learn, when their brains are most available and are most able to, like, take in all the information, you don't have the special ed costs that you have when you send them into schools. You don't have the interventions that you need to do, and it saves communities money. But, you know, getting that message through to people is just, it's really, really hard. And so they would just rather pay to send somebody to jail.
Yeah, it's so sad. And then the person deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, then our punishing society says, well, we taught them a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, what's happening in Harrisburg is just an absolute failure. It's a failure of leadership. And there are so many wonderful legislators who are fighting so hard for what is right. and there just aren't enough of them. And I just, we all need to take a hard look at who is representing us and what they are representing.
Okay, so back up for 1 minute, and just if you can give me 90 seconds on the charter school overpayment thing you'd mentioned. Just describe how that's happening a little better.
Well, so the state just mandates a rate that every district pays based on a formula that they have, which is completely broken. So school districts do not, when a child leaves a regular school district to go to a charter school, the cost, the actual cost of educating the child at the charter school is not what the school district pays. Mm-hmm. It pays a rate that the state mandates. The rate the state mandates has absolutely no correlation to the cost of educating the child. So for-profit management companies come in and they start managing charter schools, and then they, obviously their incentive is to have the lowest cost to educate the child and the highest, you know, extra amount of extra money that they can have. And so it's just, you know, state auditor Jack Wagner did an audit, former state auditor Jack Wagner did an audit in 2012 and found that we're overpaying charter schools $365 million a year.
Wow, so that's profit.
That's pure profit that they skim off and they do whatever they want with. And with this pension crisis that we're facing, school districts are forced to pay the pensions of charter school teachers twice. They get paid by the state, and then the school districts also pay for the teacher's pension payment. It's a pension double dip. It is cut and dried. It is clear. It is unfair. And the craven legislators that we have in Harrisburg refuse to do anything about it.
Craven. I love that. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Can you give me the top two craven? Who's on the list that need to go? Quote the craven, nevermore. Let's get them.
I don't want to do that. I don't know
if I can
quote them. I mean, I think we need to get Governor Corbett out of office because he's taken, I mean, his top campaign donor is a charter school operator. He is in the pocket of the charter school.
Well, $369 million, come on. He'd be ungrateful if he didn't give him a little something for a campaign.
Yeah, you know, I guess so. I mean, that was a very good investment of their money. They're making money hand over fist. And so I think Corbett has to go, and then I think we need to start looking at these Republican legislators who say, I'm a fiscal conservative, and start asking them the hard question. If you are a fiscal conservative, then why are you mandating that taxpayers pay charter schools far more than it costs them to educate children?
Fiscal conservative or craven creep? You decide.
Yes, exactly. I like that. That's perfect.
Hey, Susan Spica, I like you. You're fab.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith. That's the question. Craven creep or fiscal conservative? We'll be right back with more of the Rick Smith Show coming up.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
As they say, politics makes strange bedfellows. Take Anthony Weiner, please. But the twisted tweeter of New York City politics is hardly alone in the strange world of oversexed campaigns. And at least he wasn't trying to put his strangeness into law, like Ken Cuccinelli is doing. Ken, the far right-wing attorney general of Virginia, is now running for governor. But it turns out that he really wants to be Virginia's top sex cop, patrolling people's bedrooms. That state's official tourist slogan brags that Virginia is for lovers. But not if they're into anything icky, snaps Cuccinelli, who's trying hard to reinstate a crimes against nature law, which was declared unconstitutional by a 2003 Supreme Court ruling. Ken loved that law because it bans sex that he finds unnatural. which apparently is anything beyond doing it in the missionary position. In particular, the law declared that it's a crime against nature and the state if any person carnally knows any male or female person by or with the mouth. Yes, that's a ban on oral sex, even by consenting adults, including married adults, in the privacy of their own bedrooms. Cuccinelli, who masquerades as a small government conservative, finds that icky. And by God, he wants his personal hang-up enshrined in law and enforced by government agents. Even sicker, Cuccinelli is trying to disguise this prudish invasion of people's privacy by calling it, get this, the anti-child predators law. Well, the old law did have a sexual predators provision, but why not keep that and strip out the clearly unconstitutional ban on oral sex in the home? No, says Cuccinelli, who personally intervened to kill a legislative effort to do just that. This is Jim Hightower saying, beware of Ken the Sex Cop or any other politicos who want in your bedroom.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Heaven knocking on the door, there's holds the throne. Heaven looking for the map that leads me home. I've been somewhere on good hearts turning to stone. The road of good intentions is gone dry as a bone. We take care of our own.
We try to take care of our own. Until we're not allowed to because our own are, well, a liability to the not our own. This is Pat LaMarsh. I'm in for Rick Smith. Rick Smith's show. He is, he's taking Friday nights off for the summer. I hear he's hanging out with the kids. I don't know. You decide. You know him. Actually, he's a wonderful dad, and I'm sure that's exactly where he is. Me and Carol, they love the drive-in, which is one of my favorite things that I used to do as a kid. So I hope Rick and Carol and the kids are having a nice night. And in the meantime, we're going to talk about some serious stuff. Maybe you saw in the news, maybe you didn't because mainstream news is not covering important things like labor union disputes that are being decided. Patriot Coal had a whole shell game where they stole the retirement of the mine workers and then turned around and hid the retirement stuff in a new company that they then had go bankrupt so the retirees could lose everything. And in the meantime, the Patriot workers, the retirees had to come back to the table and renegotiate. And now they have a deal. There's going to be a deal, and the deal is going to say that they actually get health insurance in their retirement. But, oh, by the way, we don't know for how long. And that is the absolute horror show of being the only, what word do I want to use for us? Modern? Industrialized, Western, I mean, pick a category. The only country of people who have an economy bigger than the economy of Rhode Island that don't have universal health care, don't have a single-payer system. It's stupid. I love it when people say, well, we got to try this first. Why? Because 100 countries doing it and having it succeed isn't good enough for us. Of course not. We have to do it in the United States and try it this way and that way. But at the forefront of the fight for a universal system has been an awful lot of labor unions who just don't get any credit for it. And there is a all-unions committee for single-payer. And with us right now is the coordinator of the All-Unions Committee for Single Payer, Kay Tillo. Hey, Killo, welcome to the... Okay, Killo. That was a Freudian thing. I'm sorry about that. Kay Tillo, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. Kay, you and I spoke earlier this week about a letter that went to the president and just about everybody else that you guys could think of that has power and uses it, sometimes not the way they should, that you're a little concerned about the Affordable Care Act. So why don't we talk real quick about that letter you wrote, and then we can work on just the whole bigger picture of what single payer would do for the United States.
Sure. It wasn't my letter. That was, particular letter was written by Terry O'Sullivan, who's the president of the Laborers International Union. But a number of other union presidents have written similar letters, the Food and Commercial Workers and the Unite. Here and
IBEW.
IBEW and the construction unions, et cetera, mm-hmm. are very concerned about the fact that the Affordable Care Act will give subsidies and tax credits to employers, small employers in the exchanges, and those subsidies will not be available to these union-negotiated plans, which means that the impact will be to undercut and to give an advantage to non-union employers, particularly in certain industries.
So is that because, and I'm just asking, I mean, obviously we know where I stand on this whole thing. I'm a big fan of single payer, and I have been for a long time. I should disclose that I'm a card-carrying member of Healthcare Now, so I've been on the HHR 676 bandwagon for a long time. But is that because big organizations have been able to negotiate a lower price forever, and this is playing catch-up with the small guys? Is that the argument anyway?
The particular issue is just this one kind. There are many issues for all of the unions, but the unions who are raising Cane right now are the unions who have what are known as multi-employer plans. They are joint plans controlled by a trust between the union and the company, and those particular plans are the ones that will be hit by being undercut by small employers being able to go into the exchanges and get the subsidies. So that, of course, there's another problem with all of the other union negotiated plans, and that is that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, has done nothing to bring the cost down. So it's extremely difficult to continue to negotiate health care.
So the max cap on profit that went into effect, I believe, in August of 2012, was it? That where a company could not make more than a certain amount of profit, that if they made more than a certain amount of profit, they had to return money back to the
that's small potatoes.
Yeah. And have you heard of anyone who got money back?
Well, I have, I think. But people are getting like a check for $100.
When they're paying $700 a month in a premium.
But, you know, the thing that I think some people don't understand, you know, they've in the law, in the ACA, they say, well, you know, you can only make 15% or 20% and use that for profit and administration. But people aren't aware that our publicly funded plan, Medicare, uses less than 2% for administration. Mm. So to say we're limiting you to just this 15 or 20% is to give away the store.
Well, they just don't have a good way to say we're limiting you to fleecing.
I see. Rather than double Dutch policing or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, really, that's what it is. It's, I mean, I've always had a problem with this because in a world where it's so easy to beat on a union, they have allowed the insurance companies to effectively have a union that guarantees them profit. So nobody is complaining about their quote unquote collective bargaining in this, Obamacare, for want of a better term. And they want us to use that term. You know, that's the Obama message. Call it Obamacare. That they are allowed to band together. I always say it's Brayer Insurance Company. Don't throw me in that bag of money. Don't throw me in that bag of money. Please don't throw me in that bag of money. No, God, 20 million more customers. Stop! You know?
Well, they did. The insurance industry played both sides of it. I mean, they gave money to the reform group, and they gave some money to those who wanted to, the Chamber of Commerce group that wanted an even better deal.
But as long as they kept single-payer people out of the closed-room talks, and as long as they took the public option off the table, they couldn't lose.
No, they certainly won. I mean, the bill that was passed certainly provides massive income and benefits for the insurance industry, although we have yet to see how everything is going to play out as we go down the go down the road. I mean, it's amazing that this bill, it takes 10 years for it to be put into play.
Yeah.
When Medicare was rolled out for the seniors in 65, it was less than 12 months, and the whole bill was in total position. I mean, there's no reason for this excruciating, long, you know, play out of, you know, when do the changes happen and when does this happen?
By legislators, by Congress people who have the best health care and paid for by taxpayers. That's the part that really frosts your cookies when you think about it, is that they before the sequester went into effect, they voted themselves their raises, and they have health care paid for by taxpayers, and they don't see any – I mean, I don't hear John Boehner jumping up and down saying, hey, wait a minute, I think I'm a hypocrite. Ah! I'm a hypocrite!
Let me give this up.
Yeah.
Do you know that some people don't know this, that Max Baucus, who guided the bill through the Senate, headed the Finance Committee, that he wouldn't allow this discussion, even a discussion about single payer. He had the people arrested who wanted to talk about that, but that he slipped into the bill a provision that covers the people in Libby, Montana, under Medicare.
Why Libby, Montana? Just curiosity. Why? Yeah, I did not know. Why Libby, Montana?
Well, he's from Montana. And, of course, I mean, there's a reason why. I mean, the people of that region have been terribly hurt by the leavings from the mine. And many, many people have asbestos poisoning and mesothelioma, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the companies have walked away from it that are responsible for it. So, you know, it's people within Max Baucus' estate. So he slipped something in the bill that says anyone that has any symptoms of this disease who lives in this area can, whether they have any credits or not, just go and sign up for Medicare.
So
they'll be covered.
So he sees the point of it. What this means is he sees the point of it, he sees the benefit of it, he just doesn't see the benefit or the point of it for anybody but a select
few. For all of
the
rest of us.
Right.
Well, you know, he had, on his staff, he had this woman named Liz Fowler, who was from WellPoint. She was from the insurance industry, and she basically wrote the bill. But he certainly knew enough to know what kind of program needed to be done for people who were really sick and really hurting and were in his state and he wanted to do something about. He didn't put them in the exchanges.
Yeah,
he put
exactly.
them in Medicare, publicly funded Medicare. It's the only case in the country where there's a region defined by an emergency order where all the people who live in that, they have any diagnosis related to these lung problems. They get to sign up for Medicare. They sent a whole staff from the Social Security office to sign up the people in Libby, Montana to go into Medicare.
So, first of all, I mean, obviously, except for a few shows like Rick's here that I'm filling in for, Rick here, except for shows like this, is anybody even talking about this? I mean, first of all, do you have to have symptoms or can I just change my address to Libby, Montana? Because I think if we got like 20 million people to do that, that could be helpful.
Well, you know, people have thought of that. People says if you could get Medicare for Libby, you know, it's maybe we could do it county by county in the whole country. I don't think so, but it shows the extent of the hypocrisy.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is how it started in Canada. Saskatchewan got it, and then, you know, all the businesses moved to Saskatchewan because they didn't have to pay health insurance anymore, and the next thing you know, son of a gun, the whole country wanted it.
Yeah, but, you know, that was very different from here because we have national laws that govern health care that impede regions from going for it.
And that's crazy because that's the ERISA stuff, right?
Yeah,
is that what you're referring to?
It's ERISA. Well, now it's the Affordable Care Act. it's also a barrier, right? It's because it sets out all these other new laws. And then it's also, see, Medicare. I mean, you don't want to break apart Medicare.
No. Well, you know, and really, could there be anything more brilliant than a system where the insurance companies get to make obscene profit and they don't have to take care of you when you get old.
That's right.
I mean, what a brilliant system. I don't got to get you to death. I just got to get you to 65.
You know, yes.
And then I dump you on the chumps.
And if you think about it, that's really what's happened with our health care, is that the disabled and the poor and the very sick are on Medicaid, publicly funded. And the elderly, who are the ones who need the most care because of their age, they're on publicly funded. And the healthy people are open to exploitation by the insurance companies, where they pay their premiums and relatively small numbers of them actually are able to collect in terms of getting health care. So we already have a system where, you know, the private insurance industry has dumped onto the public sector the most expensive and the sickest of our people.
Exactly. And then if you're a person with a decent job and you own your own home and you have health insurance, you're paying for health care like 17 times because you pay your property taxes, which pay the health insurance premiums of all the county and community employees.
Oh, that's true.
You know, you're paying your income taxes, which pay the Medicaid expenses. Then you pay your own premium, right?
Yeah.
And then you pay your property taxes, which pay many times for your local hospital, which pays, oh, by the way, none, right? But their CEO makes $500,000 or better.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This system is insane.
And then if you get sick, probably your plan isn't good enough to protect you from really serious and difficult illness.
More of the healthcare related bankruptcies happen to people who had health insurance than the people who don't.
That's right.
Yeah, because you paid your health insurance premium, then you get real sick, then you lost your job, then you didn't pay your health insurance premium, so then your health insurance ended. And then your home and those things you liked, like your car and your kids' education, they have to go away because you were too sick to work.
The only nation in the world, industrialized nation, that doesn't think that we ought to put this into one of the necessities of life.
But we do. 90% of the country wanted the public option. 90%. It's like the background checks for guns, right? To a person, everybody wanted them, and we can't have them.
Well, that's the problem. You know, that shows that there's something wrong with our democracy, because in a democracy, what the people want and need ought to be able to be enacted into the law, right?
Yeah. Okay. How long have you been at this battle?
Well, this particular healthcare battle, I started working on single payer in the early 90s.
Okay. So, by the way, we're talking to Kay Tillo. She's the coordinator for All Unions Committee for Single Payer. So that's 20 years or so, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So why can't we get it? We got universal agreement on the ground from the average poor, average slob, who, by the way, is now more overworked than he has been since this separation between the poor and the rich has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But we've got agreement on the ground, and we've got jerks in Congress that are betraying their electorate. Why can't we, in 20 years, why can't we mobilize the change so that we get it?
Well, I guess it's going to take a bigger mobilization than we've been able to do. I think that's the answer. You know, we got major change when we had really massive movements in the street in the 30s with the unions, and in the 60s with the civil rights movement. We were able to just, you know, the whole country was rising up, and that was enough to force major change in the law and the Voting Rights Act, et cetera. But
you hate America, don't you? Where is that clip? Do you have that, Brett?
Where did that come from?
There's this little stupid clip we play all the time. Whenever anybody says something about changing the country from the way it is, and we get this little girl goes, you hate America, don't you? No, but you know, that's what we're told. If we actually want this country to be a better place, to live up to its potential, we're all a bunch of malcontents. You know, we're like, have you been told by people, why don't you just be quiet because we got the Affordable Health Care Act?
Well, there are lots of people who say that's all that is possible, that we can't do big things. All we can do is little tiny things, because in this country, we can't do the big things that that could really make a difference. But say, why can't we do them? I mean, the truth is, we won't cover our people until we get to single payer.
Where's the United States of America exceptionalism? We're the best. Where's the chest beating, hair pulling, you know, teeth gnashing, pants dropping son of a gun that can get anything done?
Well, that's right. I mean, we're number 37 in healthcare in the world. There's even a song about that. We're number 37. You know?
I wrote a column a few years ago because Mick Jagger turned 65.
Yeah.
And some idiot in some major news organization, who had a much better job than I, by the way, so I probably shouldn't be calling anybody else an idiot, but this person wrote a story about how, geez, if Mick Jagger lived in the United States, he could get Social Security now. Are you kidding me? He doesn't need it, because since he was 12... he's had a universal health care system in the United Kingdom. Yeah, moron was what I was a little more polite than that in my column, but I've gotten less polite over the years. I can't even imagine that reporters in this country can even think that anybody would Mick Jagger move here and have our health care system, even though he's stinking rich? Of course not. Nobody would, because you know what, they have a conscience and they don't want their neighbor dying in the street for a curable illness.
Well, you know, I'm hopeful that we're going to make some change now, because it's very, very clear that the Affordable Care Act will not solve the problems that it set out to solve. It was supposed to cover everybody, and it was supposed to bring the costs down. And it's not going to do either one of those things. And when people find that out, they're going to be really angry about it.
And you know, and that's the one thing that this country doesn't, maybe I'm wrong, but I just think we've got so much anger already. You know, first of all, I'm allowed to criticize President Obama. He's not the best I could have gotten. And I'm so tired of being told that. You know, this particular issue is not my hot button. My hot button is that drone bombing, but this one's right up there. I just don't think he's living up to his potential. And when I say that, I get shushed. And I find the shushing really kind of irritating, because if I were saying it, if Mitt Romney had won, you know, everybody's dog would be on their car roof. But if Mitt Romney had won, I would not be getting shushed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'd be getting pushed to the front of the class.
Well, people have to learn that. We have to stand our ground on whatever it is that we believe in, regardless of who is in those positions, because, you know, we're trying to move a mountain of corporate power in this country and the hold that they have on the whole political system. So we can't be fooled. By thinking that there is a huge difference between one and the other, you know, the wars, the health care. This health care plan, the ACA, basically a Republican plan. I mean, it was the Romney plan. It was the plan for how you supposedly expand care and yet maintain a hold by the private for-profit insurance industry. That doesn't come out of the Roosevelt or the Medicare or the, you know,
right, the models,
you know, the longer, more progressive democratic tradition. So, you know, we got the Republican plan with no Republican votes, all Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a remarkable, huh?
Isn't that
this whole political system has shifted so far to the right that the Republicans want to go back to, well, you know, if Jefferson didn't need it, you know what? Jefferson had leeches. Nobody wanted universal health care when the answer was boils. You know, Fleming didn't invent penicillin until the 1930s. Health care has changed to a point now where it is desperately needed for the pursuit of happiness.
And, you know, we have all that's been developed in terms of the drugs and the science and, you know, the medical tradition has been paid for by the public. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people of the country are the ones who have financed our ability to have so much progress.
When you talk about really great things that happened in medical history, and, you know, I can't stop thinking about Jonas Salk, who, when he came up with the polio vaccine, gave it away.
I know.
Can you imagine that being done?
Yes. He said, you wouldn't want to patent it. Didn't he say he couldn't patent the sun?
Yeah.
You know, it's like some things just belong to all of us.
And with children dying of polio, but that's something that we as a big community, the United States of America, a big community, we should be saying, how can you actually deny people the access to getting healthy? And by the way, that person who doesn't have health care, they just handed you a donut through a drive-through.
Yep.
You know, they just coughed while they made your coffee. It's if you can't think of it any other way, you're going to save money in your taxes, and it's selfish.
But, you know, I think you're right that we have solid majority opinion in terms of people who think that everybody ought to get care.
Yeah.
It's only a very tiny minority of folks who have no conscience.
A minority without a conscience, the totality of the power.
I think that people should die in the streets if they don't have the money to pay. I think there's been a lot of confusion over what we have to do. And I think there are many people who really thought if we passed the ACA that it would do the job. And it's not going to. And so, hey, even Harry Reid now is saying we're going to have to remove the private insurance companies because that's the next step.
I really think we have to stop electing people who get a clue 30 years into the conversation.
30 years too late.
Now, H.R. 676 is the Medicare for All, Congressman Conyers' bill that he puts up every 2 years. I love that man. If people want to help, how do they help? How do they get involved?
Oh, well, what we need, we have 48 co-sponsors in the bill in the House. And what would help tremendously is if people would contact their congressperson and ask them to sign on to the bill, sign on to H.R. 676, and they should let, you know, your congressperson should let Congressman Conyers know they want to sign on. And that would help tremendously. If we can grow the support within the Congress, it will help us to move it forward.
Now, is it healthcare-now.org?
Yes, that's one of the organizations. Healthcare-now.org is one of the national
organizations. And can people click on to send a message to their congressperson through that, or should they go to your website? Do you have a website?
My website is a union web. If they want to know about what the unions are doing and what unions have endorsed 676, go to unionsforsinglepayer.org.
Okay, great.
But you can go find, if you want to find out about single payer, go to pnhp.org. And people can also go to healthcare-now.org. And you know, there are lots of places to do, but if to get people to sign on to the bill, because there's going to be lots of frustration over the ACA, and we need for that frustration to go to what is the solution rather than let's repeal it. You know, that's keeps us where we are with a broken and wrecked healthcare system, and we have to do this. And I believe that it becomes possible now to build the movement on the national level to make it happen. It will take us some work and lots of fighting, but it would help if we could get more Congress people to sign on.
I interviewed a Canadian attorney. I was working on healthcare, single-payer universal healthcare. I've run for office, and that was my plank with healthcare. And so I interviewed these attorneys because I'm thinking, who knows the most about healthcare issues? It's going to be the people who litigate them. And one of those attorneys said to me, your problem in your country is that if everybody gets health care, the rich are afraid they won't be able to jump the line anymore. And I got sick, I get better, I had a heart attack, I picked my doctor, I wasn't in a big long line. You know, it's all lies, but the rich want to be able to jump the line. And then he said, in your country, the rich want to be able to jump the queen. Kay Tillo, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a treat, and hopefully we'll talk to you again on the Rick Smith Show real soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick on the Rick Smith Show, and we'll be back in just a minute.
I'll never turn. I'll never bend. I'm with you now.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It stopped the flight to the charter schools because we have something to offer that the charter schools don't offer.
Julie Sellers, president of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers, talking about the learning center model of public education that educators from around the country are looking to as a model for public education success.
They're called community learning centers, and each school has a resource coordinator. They do a strong community engagement with parents, community, business people, and they bring in all of the resources that students of poverty would need to overcome some of the problems that they face in their day-to-day lives so that they are able to be successful in school.
The learning centers were made possible by $1 billion bonding approved by voters in Cincinnati that rebuilt all the public schools in the city. Sellers says this model recognizes the challenges poor students face, helping them while at the same time preserving a voice on the job for teachers. The House Majority Whip has become the number one target of immigration reform advocates. Jesse Russell reports.
Hundreds of immigration reform advocates descended on Bakersfield, California, Wednesday to put pressure on U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy to push for reform in the House of Representatives. McCarthy has become the primary target of the reform movement due to his position as Republican House Whip. In the past, he said he doesn't support a path to citizenship, but advocates believe he is vulnerable to persuasion due to his congressional district being 35% Latino. Service Employees International Union Secretary Treasurer Eliseo Medina spoke at the rally.
You know that this immigration system only results in more people dying in the desert.
That's right.
It results in more families being split apart by deportation, and it results in more crops rotting in the fields because there aren't enough workers, and it results in a lot of pain and suffering for our community and for our country.
In June, the Senate passed a comprehensive reform bill with a vote of 68 to 32. However, the legislation is stalled in the House.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is fighting efforts by the government to block the merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. The union says that in the name of encouraging competition, the Department of Justice risks destroying the only merger that has a chance of competing with other big airlines in order to protect consumers. The union says the airline merger the government wants to block promises new opportunities for airline workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now, it's back to the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
All right, do the show, all right. I want to change the world. Hi, I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick. This is the Rick Smith Show. Rick's off raising heck, doing something fun, hanging out with his kids, wonderful dad. It'd be nice if everybody had wonderful parents. That is not always the case, unfortunately, in the United States of America or anywhere in the world. I'm certain it's a universal problem. Joining me right now is an old, wonderfully fabulous, great, fantastic hero, shero of mine, Amanda Cost. Welcome back. Welcome back. Well, hopefully we'll be back eventually, but welcome to the Rick Smith Show. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm great, Pat. How are you? It's so nice to hear your voice.
Oh, nice to hear yours, too. I use my Spruce Run mug all the time, and I think of you constantly. You are an advocate for victims of domestic violence, and I reached out to you this week because of a story that was up in your neck of the woods, up in New England, of a dad who had a supervised visit, and during the supervised visit, killed his child and himself.
Such a devastating story. I couldn't believe it when I heard it myself.
Now, for those of us who've worked in advocacy for different aspects, and when I was working in the homeless shelter, we certainly had to, we had people who we were barring from the shelter because there were protection orders against them, you know, for the people who were staying in the shelter. And, you know, shelters are crazy places anyway, because you have rape victims staying in the same shelter with rapists. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. just the world is such a crazy place. But you would think that in a supervised setting, something like this wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, you know, they set these supervised centers up back in the 90s specifically for victims of domestic violence and their children so that they would have a safe place to do that exchange, and it wouldn't be out on the streets by the 7-Eleven or at the corner of the McDonald's, that there would be a secure place. And it's just, you know, we shouldn't really be shocked, because there are so many perpetrators out there like that that are determined to do what they're going to do. And even the most secure situations that we can set up are not necessarily going to stop the ones that are most determined to do what they're going to do, which, you know, we should continue to have centers like this. They're still very important. We just need to look at what were some of the
factors. So there's no, like, empty your pockets. I mean, this guy's not going to isn't having a supervised visit because nobody's worried.
Well, it's interesting, because what they describe is it was a contentious marriage. Mm-hmm. And then what you go on to read about is the fact that, well, she had a restraining order out against him back in 2012. And, in fact, he threatened to kill him. He threatened to kill him being the son. He threatened to kill the mom. He was a very violent, threatening man. And for me, that's not contentious. That's abusive. That's horrible. Frightening, and everybody's bells and whistles should have gone off. So you're right, the supervision wasn't about the fact that they couldn't agree on a place where they would drop the kid off. There were concerns about what this man was capable of doing. And I don't know about the security of this particular place. I don't, there isn't much information about it, but I do notice that they're going to start looking into whether or not security is an issue, because I think they're realizing it is. But, you know, we have one up here in Maine, in very, very rural Maine. We have a visitation center that's just been established in the last few years, and the security there is locked doors. There's no metal detector. There's no police officer outside. It's a, you know, rural Maine, and we have lots of guns up here, but yeah. We're going on good faith, I guess, which is not the best thing to go on in some situations.
Many legislatures, the move is to be able to carry weapons on a schoolyard, to be able to bring weapons to the Capitol. I mean, yeah. All across the country, the ALEC bills and the NRA are working diligently to have guns be available everywhere, even where logic, my logic anyway, says, well, I really don't know that the school is the right place.
Right.
But so if someone has, and help me with this, because I have shaken my head when Children and Youth has given a child back, and I've shaken my head when they've taken it away. Like, I know this person a lot better than you do. Why are you taking that kid away, you know? And then the other side of the – so, you know, you shake your head because people are doing the best they can under very difficult circumstances. But how much – first of all, how tough is it on a child to have to go see a parent that has been threatening them and their mom? I mean, is there something good to that forced visitation?
That's a really good question. I think so many children are resilient to a point, but we do a lot of work looking at what it's like for children when there is an expectation that they will, have visitation with a parent that's offending and threatening, and that, you know, even the most resilient kid has long-term effects from that, whether it be going on to have violent relationships later on in their lives or mental health issues or substance abuse issues, a variety of things. So the impact can definitely be great. I mean, I can't. I'm with you in this situation. I wonder what was going on that led the courts to allow for visitation at all, given the threatening nature of this man and his behavior. I'm not quite sure, and of course, I don't know all the details.
Right. Is this part of the innocent till proven guilty stuff? And so that just means, well, you know, while we're pending an investigation, you have to let people see their kids.
Well, you know, it might be a part of that. The thing that is a mystery to me is that the only thing that I've learned about this particular case that was a viable document in the court around visitation was this restraining order, which is they were not married at any point in time, from what I can tell, and there was no like parental rights or custody established. So there may have been something within this restraining order that allowed for this kind of visitation to be set up. And it may be that, you know, in a protection order, you're not found guilty. Somebody is just being given an added protection, and so therefore it may be a part of that, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, you're right. He was not a nice guy, and it sounds to me like a lot of people knew it, and he was very violent and threatening, and it's really concerning that he had access to innocent people.
Do stories like this stop people in abuse situations from reaching out for help? I mean, I'm thinking I would be afraid if I've got my kid and I've run away, and I know that I've got an abuser out there, I would be afraid to have in, you know, my next step be consulting authorities or contacting someone, getting some help, because I don't want them to say, okay, now the dad gets visitation. You know, that would frighten me from being more public about my needs to get some sort of help from the authorities.
Yeah, you know, my experience, and I've worked on, you know, a domestic abuse hotline for the last 15 years, and I've spoken with so many people who will talk about the response that they received from law enforcement or from a judge who was passing down a judgment in a particular case, or the response from the different people that were in their lives in that time. And that response prevented them from reaching out in the future to get more help and ended up putting them in a more dangerous situation. And so that response is something that we are constantly working on as advocates with all of our community partners. What are we really saying and what are we really doing? And are we doing it in a vacuum? Because if we are, then we're not being helpful. We need to be looking at what are all the different factors in the situation where a person is experiencing abuse and how can we all be helpful? And I'm proud to say in Maine, and I know a number of other New England states, we've been looking at implementing risk assessments where we are looking at a number of risk factors that might be out there in regards to the abusive partner, like have they, you know, ever threatened to commit suicide? Do they have access to weapons? Do they has there ever been physical abuse or physical violence in the past? So we go through this list of risk factors, and there's a score, which scoring is always one of those things that can be kind of tricky, but it gives us a chance to look at all of the things that may have gone on and then to be able to speak with our partners, like law enforcement. They have to implement this tool. The judges have to use this tool. Bail commissioners have to use this tool. We all are going to be using this tool and be able to determine what's going to be the best thing when it comes to the safety of the children and the non-offending parent.
Yeah.
And a lot of, hopefully that's going to mean longer jail time, because that's one of the only things that in some situations when you have a determined perpetrator is going to keep them from harming their family.
Yeah, by the way, if you punch someone you love in the face, it doesn't make you any less of a bad guy just because you loved them. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, wow, sending them to jail. They punch somebody. You know, it's like, you know, then people get shocked when you're having these conversations. Well, probably not with you, because, you know, they already understand that you're not going to tolerate that kind of response.
But no better.
Yeah. But, you know, like, oh, well, you know, it was domestic violence. I don't even believe I'm hearing this is, you know, my response. It's like, no, you don't get to hit somebody just because you said you loved them.
Yeah. No,
you know.
You don't get to hit them just because you said through thick and thin and better and worse.
Yeah. Amanda, we did reach out to some folks in Pennsylvania to also join in and let us know, versus what you had to contribute. And unfortunately, there just aren't very many people that want to work on a Friday night.
No, that's too bad.
Can't really blame them, yeah.
Pennsylvania has some great programming going on, particularly related to technology and how that impacts victims and can be either a helpful safety thing or can put them in more danger. So that's too bad because there's great programming going on in Pennsylvania related to safety and domestic violence.
Well, we're going to keep reaching out and keep contacting them, and hopefully we'll get them on for next. I'm on here on Friday nights. Rick Smith is a wonderful fellow, but he gets to spend a night with his own family. So we'll try and get someone on next week to talk to us from Pennsylvania. We didn't want to ignore the Pennsylvania aspect of this, but this was a New
right.
Hampshire event, and it just blew my mind. And a mm-hmm. wonderful excuse to talk to Amanda.
Yeah, you too, Pat.
Take care of yourself. Amanda Costa, a fabulous woman, and I have borne witness to the people that she has helped get out of terrible situations, and she's a real hero in the United States of America. I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show. We'll be right back.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No game, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
As they say, politics makes strange bedfellows. Take Anthony Weiner, please. But the twisted tweeter of New York City politics is hardly alone in the strange world of oversexed campaigns. And at least he wasn't trying to put his strangeness into law, like Ken Cuccinelli is doing. Ken, the far-right-wing attorney general of Virginia, is now running for governor. But it turns out that he really wants to be Virginia's top sex cop, patrolling people's bedrooms. That state's official tourist slogan brags that Virginia is for lovers. But not if they're into anything icky, snaps Cuccinelli, who's trying hard to reinstate a crimes against nature law, which was declared unconstitutional by a 2003 Supreme Court ruling. Ken loved that law because it bans sex that he finds unnatural, which apparently is anything beyond doing it in the missionary position. In particular, the law declared that it's a crime against nature and the state if any person carnally knows any male or female person by or with the mouth. Yes, that's a ban on oral sex, even by consenting adults, including married adults, in the privacy of their own bedrooms. Cuccinelli, who masquerades as a small government conservative, finds that icky. And by God, he wants his personal hang-up enshrined in law and enforced by government agents. Even sicker, Cuccinelli is trying to disguise this prudish invasion of people's privacy by calling it, get this, the Anti-Child Predators Law. Well, the old law did have a sexual predators provision, but why not keep that and strip out the clearly unconstitutional ban on oral sex in the home? No, says Cuccinelli, who personally intervened to kill a legislative effort to do just that. This is Jim Hightower saying, beware of Ken the sex cop or any other politicos who want in your bedroom.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
I'm just an average man.
Standing up to corporatists. And who else? The people who put up fireworks during the radio show. The senators were playing, I guess, again tonight over on City Island, and sure, what is it like clockwork? 10, 12. It sounds like someone's got the firing squad out for the guest. That is not the case. It's just very pretty fireworks that are very bad for my planet. I'm one of those grumpy people who doesn't like fireworks. And they, I find them frightening to small children. And, you know, okay, I'm done. I'm done trashing all things America. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. But I'm going to have help. Steve Kramer, welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Steve is a buddy of mine. He has done all kinds of podcasts and blogs and interesting things. HiddenMessage.wordpress.com is your most recent blog, yes?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you are a computer network engineer and an internet specialist and been doing so, well, longer than you care to admit, because
back when we were hand cranking the internet, that was pretty much the time when we started.
And also, you and I, old friends, because you're one of those radical third party members who thinks that there's got to be another way.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Oops, I just told all 11 people we've talked into listening tonight.
Right.
So the NSA, they're naughty. They're spying. I was researching the Battle of Blair Mountain today for the book I'm writing. And, you know, the phone operators,
mm-hmm.
they listened in on the phone calls that were being made and called the coal companies and told them about the arrest warrants that were being issued for their corporate cops that were going to be arrested.
Yeah, they know a lot of different things.
So with this whole NSA thing, it's not new.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely it's not. I mean, this is something that, you know, honestly, if you go back as far as when the whole thing was created, it's been doing that more or less ever since. The difference is that because of the rise of technology and how fast we've been developing it and the different things that it can do and the conveniences that it brings, it's also made it very convenient for the NSA to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've seen since about, I'd say, 1995 with the rise of a program called Echelon, which was a satellite spying program at that point, we've seen the power of the NSA has just been growing by leaps and bounds to the point where we're at right now.
The satellite spying program. Now, when I get lost, or when I go on my phone, I go to the maps, I put in what I'm looking for, and then I flip the little map thinger up, and I can see the road I'm on. I can literally see the tree I'm driving by.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really think there are any secrets?
Well, you know, you have to go ahead and figure that. Honestly, there are some things that you do want to keep secret. And it's interesting that you bring up those things because when, you know, I'm in the Maryland area here, we have a lot of different, so-called secret places, that is the NSA or CIA, number of people like that. And if you go in and take a look at your phone and take a look at that map, take a look at some of those, places like the CIA, headquarters or NSA, or different arrays that they have in, you know, farmland out in western Maryland or something like that.
Will I get shot for looking at those things?
No. What you'll find is a big fuzzy blob.
Really?
Yeah. There's a number of places right near my house, actually. There's a big box over it or a big fuzzy blob. You can't actually see what's going on there.
Wow.
So, you know, it does seem to be that there are some secrets still out there, but they're just all being held on one side of the coin.
Only one guy gets the secrets, yeah.
Right.
Or one set of guys. You know, and I joke all the time. You know, I ran for Vice President of the United States. If someone isn't watching me, I'm disappointed. Want to be, a burdock in the saddle. But the average person just doesn't, and nothing makes me crazier than the person who says, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you shouldn't care if they're watching you.
Yeah, I mean, recently, just in like 2009, I believe, we had a report out of Fort Gordon, Georgia, where the U.S. Signal Corps is located. And you had a couple of analysts then, and this is before Snowden, about the same time that you were getting other whistleblowers coming forward. But they were saying that they were listening to conversations from some of our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, including conversations they were having with their spouses,
including
some intimate conversations that actually, rather than people going ahead and turning them off, they got recorded and passed around the office for general amusement.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people say, oh, who cares? I mean, really, it's gotten to the point where, and I Or maybe it's always been this point. I mean, all you really have to do is go to the Vatican and see people being pressed between stones and other people being stoned and people being roasted alive and, you know, all the kinds of rotten things humans have been doing to each other for, you know, thousands of years or longer. A person's insensitivity to the loss of somebody else's rights is pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think part of that is just from the fact that they get the idea that rights somehow aren't reciprocal. It's not a matter of, you know, I have to guarantee somebody else has theirs before I can have mine.
But I'm not a terrorist.
Right, right. But you don't have to be.
No, but I want to know if that guy over there is a terrorist. And you're not going to tell me that he's just a little bit beiger than me. There's got to be something else going on. I mean, really, I think racism figures into this. Like, a whole
There's
pile.
A certain amount of that.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the other part of that is that when the NSA recently has been attempting to go ahead and justify these programs, and they've been bringing out a lot of things about, you know, counterterrorism efforts. And if you take a look at these things, they are, for the most part, you know, good things that we went ahead and had somebody watching and good things we had somebody taking care of these things. But at the same time, a lot of these things, most of them, as a matter of fact, that were trotted out recently, as the ESF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the ACLU went over them, could have been easily solved by the conventional gumshoe detective work that we've been doing for years.
Yeah,
and furthermore, it's a lot better when we get to court if you have that information rather than just, I intercepted a signal from somebody and it said this.
Okay, Steve, so I'm going to ask you a question I didn't tell you I wanted to know about.
Okay.
So if it's something you either don't think you can speak to or don't want to speak to, that's fine. But we've got these guys with joysticks, and they're talking about putting a drone, you know, master control, for want of a better term, here in Pennsylvania, where there'll be some people with, you know, equipment that will navigate a drone somewhere in the Caspian, and it will kill people and possibly, you know, somebody's kids. And we have the technology now to do all of that stuff, and with lethal consequence. And yet, except for our crazy little crowd, I don't see anybody busting a gut over the thing.
Yeah, part of that, again, I think, is just because the whole purpose of doing warfare in this manner and signal and interception in this manner and stuff like that is so that we can make it antiseptic. We can keep our hands off of it and just leave it to, you know, the guys in that office over there with the closed door.
Why isn't it more accurate? Now, forget the fact that we're suspending habeas corpus, we're suspending trial by jury, we're suspending presumption of innocence. Forget that we're suspending all those things. Why are we killing little kids and not just the guy we're after? This is, after all, technology.
Right, and you would think that we actually get more accurate
and
because of all of this technology. But again, you've lost part of, you know, you still, you know, the smartest computer is only as smart as the guy sitting behind it. And you're going to have that human factor. And when the humans are so removed from the situation, I mean, I think we saw when the, you've heard of the collateral murder video where we had a helicopter gunship in Iraq that opened fire on people that they suspected at the time were civilians. And as a matter of fact, that was the case.
Reuters, yeah, Reuters.
And these guys just went ahead and opened fire anyway because they were that far removed from the situation.
They begged to.
Right. Yeah.
Please, please let me shoot. Let me shoot. Can I engage? Can I engage? Please, please, please. I mean, it was horrifying. And so that's what's happening now. Like, these are going to be easy chairs, right? You're going to be swiveling around and waiting for the next target. We interviewed Garrett Reppenhagen a while back, who was the former head of Iraq Veterans Against the War and calls himself the best-trained terrorist in the world, trained by the United States government. He was a sniper in Iraq. And he talks about how they just are targets. They're just targets. They're not people. And that's what you're trained.
Yeah, the Army and armed forces have had to, over time, really sort of instill that in people. If you take a look at some of the historical records of war during, say, the Civil War, World War I, where they were literally in a trench, you know, a few hundred yards away, they would, you know, sometimes even send each other gifts or flowers or something across the lines. Mm-hmm. They were looking at each other, and in a lot of cases, people were just taking their guns and firing them in the air.
Yeah.
They didn't actually want to go ahead and kill everybody on the other side.
Right.
But, you know, it was through training in Vietnam and conflicts before and after that, they realized the value of where they had to actually train these people to become killers and to think of these people without doing it, you know, in a conscious fashion.
Yeah. Technology is so helpful. Steve Kramer, thanks so much for taking some time to join us tonight on the Rick Smith Show.
No problem. Thank you.
Have a great evening and a wonderful weekend. This is Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith. And we'll be back with more of the show coming up.
Me and my people are through. Me and my people are ready. Me and my people are just about due. I'm a massive air strike on a beautiful night. Yeah, it's my song I'm singing. Somebody better start counting.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It stopped the flight to the charter schools because we have something to offer that the charter schools don't offer.
Julie Sellers, president of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers, talking about the learning center model of public education that educators from around the country are looking to as a model for public education success.
They're called community learning centers, and each school has a resource coordinator. They do a strong community engagement with parents, community, business people, and they bring in all of the resources that students of poverty would need to overcome some of the problems that they face in their day-to-day lives so that they are able to be successful in school.
The learning centers were made possible by a $1 billion bonding approved by voters in Cincinnati that rebuilt all the public schools in the city. Sellers says this model recognizes the challenges poor students face, helping them while at the same time preserving a voice on the job for teachers. The House Majority Whip has become the number one target of immigration reform advocates. Jesse Russell reports.
Hundreds of immigration reform advocates descended on Bakersfield, California, Wednesday to put pressure on U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy to push for reform in the House of Representatives. McCarthy has become a primary target of the reform movement due to his position as Republican House Whip. In the past, he said he doesn't support a path to citizenship, but advocates believe he is vulnerable to persuasion due to his congressional district being 35% Latino. Service Employees International Union Secretary Treasurer Alicio Medina spoke at the rally.
You know that this immigration system only results in more people dying in the desert.
That's right.
It results in more families being split apart by deportation, and it results in more crops rotting in the fields because there aren't enough workers, and it results in a lot of pain and suffering for our community and for our country.
In June, the Senate passed a comprehensive reform bill with a vote of 68-32. However, the legislation is stalled in the House.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is fighting efforts by the government to block the merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. The union says that in the name of encouraging competition, the Department of Justice risks destroying the only merger that has a chance of competing with other big airlines in order to protect consumers. The union says the airline merger the government wants to block promises new opportunities for airline workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Hi, I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for joining us. You know, this is the way it used to happen. It used to be nobody could vote. You had to be a white guy who owned property. And then more and more people were emancipated. You got your black guys, and then you got your women of all kinds. And then all these other people were emancipated. And then, because all these people who really the landed aristocracy did not want to have voting, had the vote. You couldn't control the voters anymore. You had to control who they could vote for. So if you limit their options by limiting who has access to the ballot, you can effectively limit whether or not someone votes. And that's why you get those comments. Oh, I'd vote for so-and-so, but they can't win anyway. Comments like that. Now, there are also ways that they limit who can vote, like that last quote where voter ID is going to keep, what did they say, Brett? Like 39,000 people now they know were kept from voting last year, 2012, in Pennsylvania alone because of voter ID, because people who were afraid they were going to be asked, people who misunderstood the news, people didn't understand those god-awful stupid billboards. Well, on the other side of that, on the side of stopping people from being able to run, we have joining us right now Carl Romanelli. And when I say on the side of that, I mean he's one of those people that in the state of Pennsylvania, they stopped from running. How many signatures did you collect, Carl? 100,000?
Yes.
100,000 signatures to run for the United States Senate from Pennsylvania. Well,
To be accurate, 99,802.
Well, thank you for not lying. Very important on the Rick Smith Show. So you needed 60-something thousand.
Yes, the highest ever in the history of Pennsylvania.
And how do they determine how many signatures you need? Now, this is just to be a seen on the ballot. Just to be on the ballot, you need to collect 60-something thousand signatures.
Right. Third party and independent candidates need to collect a number equal to 2% of the highest vote getter in the Commonwealth in the previous state election.
So that would have been the governor's race, I imagine.
No, that was actually when one of my Senate opponents, Bob Casey, received 3 million votes or so when he ran a basically uncontested campaign for state treasurer.
Oh. So that's the state. That's right. Because in the Commonwealth, there you run. Your treasurer is elected, and your attorney general is elected. Thank goodness, because I love what she's doing right now.
Yes, I do too.
What else? Attorney general, treasurer, and secretary of state elected in the Commonwealth.
No. Attorney general, auditor general, and treasurer are the three row offices. As well as governor and lieutenant governor.
Okay. So you want to run for United States Senate. You want to give people an option besides Tweedle Democrat and Tweedle Republican. And when you threw your hat in the ring and got verified tens of thousands of signatures of Pennsylvanians who agreed that your name should be on the ballot.
Correct. And again, fundamentally, any Pennsylvanian that affixes their name to a nominating petition, that should be First Amendment protected speech. What happens is you go through exercise, and just so listeners understand, third party and independent candidates have these absurd number of signatures we have to get, while Republicans and Democrats who have all the money and all the members, their requirement for the same race is 2,000 signatures.
Wow.
So we're talking more than 37 times. And for a small party, that really takes every bit of energy and time and every cent that you have just to qualify for the ballot.
Now, Carl, so let's say that the game is rigged.
We can say that.
And ever since the printed ballot was invented, because before that, you used to get a piece of paper and take a little quill in there, and you'd say, okay, I want George Washington, right? And you'd write his name on. But then they printed a ballot, and as soon as they printed the ballot, they could keep people off the ballot because, you know, they weren't on the ballot. So why would a really smart, really wonderful guy like you, and I can testify that you are both, even want to mess with this game? I mean, run for U.S. Senate, get your get the grief of getting on the ballot. What is the point of that?
Well, the point, Pat, is that if we are to fix everything that's wrong with our country, with our world, with our communities, and we want to do so peacefully, this is the way to go. I contend that Congress, the state legislatures, attorney general's offices, and so on, these are powerful positions, and if we're going to peacefully see change, we need to do it through our process, which has become anything but fair, especially in recent days. We thought the Jim Crow mentality was behind us, but it seems like from the 90s forward, it's had a resurgence with a vengeance.
Now, so you did get your name on the ballot, and then what happened?
Well, after we qualified for the ballot, our signatures were challenged. And when these challenges are filed, those who challenged us in our case were essentially the Democratic Party. They nitpick. Let's say you signed my petition, Pat LaMarche,
uh-huh,
and you were registered in Pennsylvania as Pat A. LaMarche,
mm-hmm,
and you left out the A when you signed the signature.
Mm-hmm.
They would try to have that signature stricken. If a signer put down the date July 12 but didn't put the year in, 06, they were asking to have that signature stricken. And absurdities along that line. Well, the Democrats, when they challenged my signature...
So only the Democrats challenged you, not the Republicans?
No.
Okay.
No, just the Democrats challenged us. And what they do is instead of having party representatives, they generally look for rank-and-file people to put as the challengers to the signature, even to the petition, even though it's the party that's funding it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did in the case of Nader. They had, like, a senior citizen, a college student, a housewife, folks like that. However, in my case, the four challengers were four of the most, among the most powerful attorneys in the state, who challenged it, including, a man that's now a judge in Philadelphia, Judge Anders. They were clearly sending a message that I was messing with the wrong kind of power and they were going to get me. Now, in our case, what they required of us was for every day for about 7 weeks, Monday through Friday, from 9 in the morning until 4:30 p.m., we had to sit in a room in Harrisburg with 9 representatives of the Green Party and 9 Democrats who haggled over these signatures.
Wow.
So that in and of itself is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But what frustrated me more than anything was the fact that we defeated most of their challenges, certainly enough to be on the ballot. And then Commonwealth Court President Judge at the time, James Gardner Collins, on August 31st of 2006, allowed the Democrats to amend their petition so that signatures we had already defeated them on, they could come back at us for new technicalities. Let's say we beat them
Hang on a minute, Carl. So just because we're going to run out of time. So what happened is you were kept off the ballot.
I was kept off the ballot. And for the pleasure of doing that, the court then turned around
and assessed me with $84,000 in legal fees owed to the Democrats' attorneys for the pleasure of being kicked off the ballot under the guise of my acting in bad faith and prolonging the challenge period by actually defending the signatures, essentially.
Yeah, the people who signed your paper. So the reason that we're talking about this now isn't that we can't get over 2006 and we're all cranky about it. It's because things are changing in the Commonwealth here in Harrisburg. Things are changing. At least there's a glimmer of light in the State House, and I wanted you to give me, you know, a quick 180-second recap of what's going on right now, and are things going to lighten up on the third parties in the state of, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
Well, we're hoping, and we're asking citizens to contact their state senators and ask them to support Senate Bill 195, which is called the Voter Choice Act, which would make our requirement the same as the Republicans and Democrats if your party had enough members to be considered a minor party. In Pennsylvania today, that would affect the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Constitution would all be considered minor parties. And so the requirement would be 2,000, not 20,000 or 67,000. At Senator Mike Fulmer from Lebanon County has sponsored this. We are demanding at least public hearings on this. And also I want to point out before we run out of time, Pat, is that, we found out 2 years after the challenge that there was a vast criminal conspiracy in, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in the scandal known as Bonusgate, where in order to challenge my signatures, it wasn't the wealthy attorneys, the wealthy challengers, or the wealthy Bob Casey campaign that actually funded this challenge against me and Ralph Nader 2 years earlier, but it was the taxpayers of Pennsylvania, the scandal known as Bonusgate on the Democratic side. What that was all about was the effort against myself and Ralph Nader. And the media has done a terrible job in covering that aspect of it. And to this day, the legislature has yet to apologize for robbing the taxpayers and for doing this to one of its citizens who merely wanted to speak to the issues of our time.
It's pretty awful that it's taxpayer-funded. We're going to talk right now real quick. Hang right on, Carl. We're going to talk with Richard Winger, who, among other things, is the editor of Ballot Access News. He knows the ballot access laws for the entire nation. Richard, welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. Now, what you were hearing about here, what's been going on, and taxpayer-funded really assault on third-party candidates, and facts are what facts are. This is just, you know, I am a member of the Green Party, but if Carl were a member of any third party or an independent, I would still be horrified that this kind of stuff was going on. It doesn't matter to me that he's a Green. Would this maybe have not happened to him if he hadn't been on the ballot the same time as Ralph Nader?
Well, actually, he was trying to get on the ballot in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Nader was on in 2004.
Yeah.
See, Nader was the first victim. This is the first time the theory that the person who doesn't have enough signatures is supposed to pay gargantuan amounts of court costs. That was applied to Nader. Nobody had ever suffered that before. That was in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So then they thought, oh, gee, it worked. We got Nader off the ballot.
Yeah.
Then they tried it against Carl in 2006. It was, and then in 2010, all the minor party statewide petitions were challenged, and they were scared to death of incurring expenses of over $100,000. So they just gave up and withdrew all that work for nothing, and we never even found out if those signatures would have been good or not. In 2012, happened again.
Does it happen other places? I mean, is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania just like the absolute worst on third parties, or is this happening elsewhere in the country?
There's many ways minor parties are tortured in this country, but Pennsylvania is the only place where this particular kind of horror has ever been carried out.
Now, Carl, you can't afford to pay $80,000, can you?
No. And despite the extraordinary evidence of these criminal conspiracies, people pleading guilty specifically to those charges, two state representatives, Bill DeWeese and Mike Vion, are now serving jail terms for what they have done. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has yet to allow Ralph Nader or myself, our 15 minutes in front of them, to have the fees withdrawn, and essentially the money is owed to unindicted co-conspirators in this criminal conspiracy.
So you still have $80,000 hanging over your head?
Yes.
Can you buy a car? I mean, if you went to buy a car, would they say you go $80,000 to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
It has affected me in some ways, but I'm not a big spender of on credit terms anyway.
Easy for you to say, mister. You ran up an $80,000 bill trying to have liberty.
That's right. But to this day, just so the record is straight, I vow that I will never pay 1 cent, because paying it would be like saying that I did something wrong.
Could you go to jail, Carl?
As a retired officer of the court, I did nothing but present a fine package of integrity to the Commonwealth in good faith, and I will not acquiesce to this bullying.
Could you end up in jail? I mean, could they turn this fine into something if you don't pay it?
Yes, they could at any time tell me that I'm in contempt of a court order, and contempt is punishable by imprisonment.
Oh, good God for you. Richard Winger, that's not going to happen to Carl, is it?
Well, I Carl knows more about it than I do, but I tend to think it's been 7 years since the election, and I think that they are happy to grab Ralph Nader's money, which they have done, unfortunately, and I don't think they're going to do anything worse.
No.
But I don't want people to be too discouraged. There's a strong lawsuit pending against this whole system, and the U.S. District Court judge in Pennsylvania ridiculously said that the Constitution Party, the Green Party, and the Libertarian Party don't have standing, because they can't show how they've been hurt by the system. That is so stupid. We've had two cases like this. The first one was filed in an odd year, not a real election year.
Uh-huh.
And so the court, we lost that. They said, well, you don't have standing because there's no particular election where this is hanging over your head. I mean, we can't reopen the old one.
Right.
So then we filed a new one in 2012. And lo and behold, the Constitution Party statewide petition and the Libertarian Party statewide petition were challenged again. This time the Libertarians dug in their heels, wouldn't cower, said, no, we're going to take a chance. We're going to do our best to prove that we do have enough valid signatures. And they won. But
wow.
The Constitution Party withdrew. So how this district court judge can say that these parties weren't harmed by the system is laughable. So now it's in the Third Circuit.
And how they can say that odd years don't matter, please, for the love of God, if I see one more Hillary bumper sticker. I mean, you know what I mean? They're running already.
And I also want to underscore what Carl said about Senate Bill 195. There's a group of people in Pennsylvania working very hard to get this bill passed. And it would save the taxpayers money. All this fussing in court over whether petitions are valid costs everybody money. It's terrible for the people that petition, but it costs the taxpayers money too. And this bill is based on the Delaware system. Delaware is so smart. They don't have any of this fussing. If a party has a certain number of registered voters, it's considered ballot qualified. It nominates by convention. They're put in the general election ballot, and nobody has to sweat it. Nobody has to waste money.
How many
wonderful.
Candidates end up on the ballot in Delaware? I mean, has it got 750 or?
No, they only had 5 presidential candidates on the ballot last year, the 2 major parties and the nominees, the 3 minor parties.
Mm-hmm. And certainly when we regime changed in Iraq, we gave them a system where they could have dozens of political candidates if they wanted.
They had 103 parties on the ballot, and they used proportional representation, yeah. So nobody had to worry about wasted votes.
Right.
So how can we propose proportional representation for Iraq, and most countries in the world use it, and we are so blind to it here in this country?
Well, I think the guys gaming the system think the system's gamed for them. I think what we saw in Maine and the threats that are against everybody now in Maine right now where, you know, oh, you can't run a third party because, look, that gave you Paul LePage, you know, the man who eats labor murals for breakfast and says that his black caddy is his stepson, and that's a reason why you can tell the NAACP to kiss his butt, you know. I mean, we wouldn't have this horrible governor if you hadn't actually had an independent in the race. I mean, that's the argument.
Well, the Maine legislature tried really, really hard to pass a ranked choice voting bill this year. Unfortunately, it didn't get through. Mm. Now the irony is this might happen all over again in 2014. There's a Democratic congressman from northern Maine who's declared he's going to run for governor, give up his seat. And then there's a very strong independent.
Who literally has been running since the day after the election. After
so
the last election.
It might happen all over again, and, yeah. And LePage might squeak by with another 38% of the vote.
Right. I bought him a beer down here in Pennsylvania 2 weeks ago. I walk into my favorite watering hole. I hear the band I like to hear play, and there's the governor of Maine sitting there having a few beers.
Well, you know,
Paul, how are you?
Maine does have the initiative process, unlike Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's very difficult to put an initiative on the ballot, but I just wish there was some sympathetic millionaire who could see how we'd all be better off with ranked choice voting.
Right. Now, real quickly, Richard, I'd love to have you back on the show again so we can talk about ranked choice voting and how that works for the Academy Awards, for crying out loud. But nobody talks about Little Miss Sunshine being the spoiler to the Queen, you know. with this upcoming bill in the Commonwealth here, that could really change things. Will it change them much as long as Pennsylvania has the ability to just throw the switch for the Democrat or throw the switch for the Republican? Is having a third-party candidate on any level ever going to make a difference as long as people just go and vote party?
I think so, because 100 years ago, Pennsylvania had 5 parties represented in the legislature. Huh. They had Socialist, Progressive, and Keystone, as well as Democrats and Republicans. And they had the party straight ticket device back then, too.
Huh. They had socialists in the... Did you hear that, Brett? There's hope. There's hope yet today. Hey, Richard Winger, thank you so much for taking the time. Carl Romanelli, God love you. If you know, I know you're not going to pay a dime of it, but if you ever think about doing it, call me and I'll come up there and slap you.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Thank you.
Very nice. Right.
Thank you both for joining us. I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It stopped the flight to the charter schools because we have something to offer that the charter schools don't offer.
Julie Sellers, president of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers, talking about the learning center model of public education that educators from around the country are looking to as a model for public education success.
They're called community learning centers, and each school has a resource coordinator. They do a strong community engagement with parents, community
business people, and they bring in all of the resources that students of poverty would need to overcome some of the problems that they face in their day-to-day lives so that they are able to be successful in school.
The learning centers were made possible by a $1 billion bonding approved by voters in Cincinnati that rebuilt all the public schools in the city. Sellers says this model recognizes the challenges poor students face, helping them while at the same time preserving a voice on the job for teachers. The House Majority Whip has become the number one target of immigration reform advocates. Jesse Russell reports.
Hundreds of immigration reform advocates descended on Bakersfield, California, Wednesday to put pressure on U.S. Representative Kevin McCarthy to push for reform in the House of Representatives. McCarthy has become a primary target of the reform movement due to his position as Republican House Whip. In the past, he said he doesn't support a path to citizenship, but advocates believe he is vulnerable to persuasion due to his congressional district being 35% Latino. Service Employees International Union Secretary Treasurer Eliseo Medina spoke at the rally.
You know that this immigration system only results in more people dying in the desert.
That's right.
It results in more families being split apart by deportation. And it results in more crops rotting in the fields because there aren't enough workers. And it results in a lot of pain and suffering for our community and for our country.
In June, the Senate passed a comprehensive reform bill with a vote of 68 to 32. However, the legislation is stalled in the House.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is fighting efforts by the government to block the merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. The union says that in the name of encouraging competition, the Department of Justice risks destroying the only merger that has a chance of competing with other big airlines in order to protect consumers. The union says the airline merger the government wants to block promises new opportunities for airline workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children.
Thank you, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Man, I could use you back again. Went to the Eisenhower Library on our little trip across the country, the People's Store for America, and great presidents. They just don't make them anymore. An Air Force unit that operates one-third, according to the Associated Press, an Air Force unit that operates one-third of the nation's land-based nuclear missiles has failed a safety and security inspection. Well, just nuclear missiles. Safety and security? You can't get both. You can barely get peanut butter on your chocolate. Their second major setback this year for a force charged with the military's most sensitive mission. That's probably arguable. But anyway, the general in charge of the nuclear air force told the Associated Press, Lieutenant General James M. Kowalski. Is that really his name? General Kowalski, commander of Air Force Global Strike Command, said a team of relatively low-ranking airmen failed one exercise. Their nuclear weapons. Is low-ranking really a good idea? They have failed one exercise as part of a broader inspection, which began last week and ended Tuesday. He said that for security reasons, he cannot be specific about the team or the exercise. For security reasons, perhaps you should. You know, like a third of the nuclear weapons aren't secure. Doesn't that sound like a security problem? Anyway, here to answer some of these questions for us from the Los Alamos Study Group, Peter Neals, president of the Los Alamos Study Group, and Greg Mello, executive director. Thanks for joining us. This is the Rick Smith Show, by the way. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick, and Peter and Greg, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm great. Greg, you've been away, I hear, and so do you want me to have Peter go first?
Doesn't matter.
I don't know which one of you would like to. I mean, a third? First of all, we can blow up the world like 18 times, so does that mean like we can only blow it up 12 because we don't know where this other third is? Or I mean, how? What am I reading here? This doesn't make any. I don't have a comfort level on this story.
Well, let me kick it off. First of all, it's important to understand that they're talking about one third of the ICBM arsenal, which is only one third of the nuclear triad.
They're also, so it's only a ninth.
Well, we don't know exactly, you know, what how it breaks out, Pat. But
well, so ICBMs, you know, that's intercontinental ballistic missiles, those are all land based.
Yeah, they're in silos deep in the ground, and these crews, you know, these are young Air Force officers, and they work, you know, 40 or 60 feet underground for 24 hour shifts, and you know, they, I mean, there's a fairly low level of mission buy-in across the nuclear weapons complex.
That means there's a low level of people who think I'm really going to do this.
Right. Or think it's a good idea to have nuclear weapons, you know. And we see this at Los Alamos National Laboratory, too. I would say that the level of mission buy-in is at an all-time low up there among weapons scientists themselves.
So you've got a pile of people who either develop these weapons or are supposed to fire the weapons who don't think they're a good idea.
Well, there are a lot of people that think it's a questionable endeavor, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, how do they get them to work on this stuff? I mean, really, I mean, it's kind of like saying, would you like a job beating someone's mother?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure about the Air Force. In the case of the nuclear labs, they pay them a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, I guess
a lot of money. And so, Greg, you want to pick that up?
Sure. Well, they drill them and drill them in the Air Force, so... You know, you have to go through the simulations, and you're graded on how many seconds it takes for you to launch the world annihilating strike. And there's a lot of cognitive dissonance. Like Peter said, they spend a lot of time underground. It's kind of cool, so they wear warm, fuzzy clothing. They even have a patch that put on their uniform that says, "Death wears bunny slippers."
Oh, my goodness. Death with fuzzy slippers or bunny slippers?
Bunny slippers.
That's a patch. I got to get my hands on a patch. So can I picture these guys? I mean, do they have a cot?
Yes.
And they're sleeping.
Hammock.
And they're sleeping next to their weapon?
Yes, there's a little capsule, and they are far enough apart so that one person can't turn both keys at the same time. They have to have concurrence between the two people, and they have to launch those things. They, you know, supposedly when they get the signal, and nobody should be confused. This is not kind of cheerful Hollywood kind of thing. They launch the missiles, and it's pretty much the end of everybody.
Right. Yeah. And actually, I interviewed you guys about a year ago because I had written a story for the Huffington Post about the fact that we have committed now to revamping our nuclear arsenal, even though we signed the non-proliferation treaty.
Right.
So we've committed a whole pile of money to revamping something that we promised we wouldn't do. So
the money's gone up since a year ago.
Yeah, the story has changed since we last spoke with you, Pat.
Okay, bring us up
to date. We're committed to building 5 new nuclear weapons now, which is a violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But we're going to massage it so that we can make it work.
Where is the argument in favor of this? And is there just so much right now going wrong in the United States of America's, like, everything? I mean, I'm starting to think that Snowden and Bradley Manning are, like, the best presence that the government ever had.
Right.
You know, because they've got a whole pile, and let's throw in George Zimmerman. They've got a whole pile of people fighting over these issues, and nobody's noticing the shell game that's going on in the background.
Yes, you know, there's a lot going on. And, you know, the amount of money that some people would like to get to remodel and upgrade all this, is on the order of, and no one knows for sure, but over the next 25 years, $500 billion.
Wow. And what I, the math I did at the time, which was less money, was it would be enough to give every starving person in the world $900.
Mm-hmm.
Every starving person, 18,000 people starve to death today. Every starving person in the world, $900. That's how much money we're talking about to violate the treaty we signed.
Well, it's really pathetic. And it happens because there's not enough outrage. So that little, you know, that little germ of outrage, we got to protect that and nurture it and build a flame.
Yeah. Maybe we should be selling those patches.
Well, I
the bunny slipper patches.
If you just, you know, type in Death Wears a Snuggie, that's the other thing that, or Death Wears Bunny Slippers, then you'll, on Google Images, you'll see them. Of course, you know, NSA will see you seeing it, but oh well.
Hi, NSA. I'm hoping they've got my number by now. I've been trying awful hard to make trouble for a long time. I just did it. There are the patches. I think Brett just did it, too. Death Wears a Snuggie. Oh, my God. It's like, and there are the bunny slippers. It looks like that thing that you, that they advertise that you run your hands through the front of, and it's like a blanket with arms that you can watch the movies with. But these guys have their fingers on the button.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so, oh my.
It's God. Cold down there, you know?
Can we put this up on the, Brett, can we put this picture of this patch up on everything, everywhere that anybody could ever see? Yeah, I'll send it to you. And it is amazing because you've got the guy on the red button and he's got skeletal hands, so he's like death. You see the rockets going off. You know, what you don't see is little Billy getting blown to smithereens. Maybe we need to put that somewhere on the patch. Or a new patch, you know, just with maybe Billy's entrails. I mean, it's almost like we don't pay attention to the fact that, first of all, that quote that Brett played at the beginning of Eisenhower's, you know, crucified on a cross of iron, mankind crucified on a cross of iron, the military-industrial complex. That's part of this, the money for these things. But then we actually believe in the nuclear deterrent. Is that still a reality in our lexicon in the United States of America?
Well, at the highest levels, it certainly is. Peter and I have been to Washington, and I was just there in July with two colleagues, and we sat over there at the Republican Capitol Hill Club and heard a talk about how we had to upgrade all these missiles and how, let's see, I forget how many countries, 30-some-odd countries we're keeping safe with these missiles and bombs. They probably don't know that, but that's what people tell themselves in the right circles.
Now, do you guys, and I do want to go back to the news story that prompted me to call you guys, but do you guys keep an eye on the material for the dirty bombs? I mean, is that something also you pay attention and watch where that ends up or where it came from or, you know, who's watching all those aging nuclear reactors in the former Soviet Union? And
too many places, too much material, and the U.S. government is very, very interested in that, so we don't need to be.
Because they're keeping an eye on it. Aren't there like, isn't there just a whole pile of nuclear crap in the ocean, not counting Fukushima? But isn't there just a whole pile of stuff, boats that went down and things that fell off landing pads and stuff that we also don't know where it is?
But, Pat, the ocean is very big and we mustn't worry.
They found the Titanic! I saw the China!
The problem, you know, is that this morale problem, so we have, it's their morale problem, but of course it's our problem, as you said at the beginning. And of course it is, perhaps it's their morale problem is caused by our morale problem, which is that we're not doing enough about these things.
Mm-hmm. Really, honest to God, I'm starting to feel like, and I think I represent the average slob better than most, I am so overwhelmed with what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I'm still in grief about Bradley Manning's apology. Just, you know, that's the result of torture. If you torture people, you can get them to say anything. I'm upset about so many things that are going on, from healthcare issues to domestic violence, to things that we're not having. We're crapping out on our education system. I forgot to pay attention to the nuclear missile issue. how much can we expect the average? Honestly, I can hear the radios being turned off right now. This is a buzzkill, you know? I mean, how much can we expect the average person to be able to grab hold of? And how much would that person need to do?
Here's how you grab hold of it. This is really about the basic social contract in the country. It's really about how much of your child's future or your elderly parent's future or your grandchild's future is going to be turned into military hardware, blown up somewhere, wasted somehow in that world, just as the excellent comment that you had at the beginning from Dwight Eisenhower had it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it comes down. And if this system is forced to economize and is forced to shrink, then decisions will have to be made and there'll be fewer people in bunny slippers at the bottom of silos.
Now, where do these weapons get manufactured? They don't just pop out of thin air. Where are they made?
All over the place.
Meaning all over the United States or all
yeah.
over? Oh, so we don't import nuclear weapons?
No.
Okay.
We import some electronic parts, which is the defense establishment is very worried about, but the missiles, no. In fact, missiles are ICBMs are made in Columbine, Colorado, just by coincidence.
Really? So I'm writing this down because I'm just like a listener right now. Oh my God, Columbine! All right,
yeah, check it out.
So
reentry vehicles are made in Albuquerque.
Reentry, like there's a reason to come back.
like the nose cone that holds the bombs.
Yeah.
Some of those are manufactured by subcontractors that are in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the warheads are assembled in Amarillo.
Huh.
And
Amarillo by Morning now has a new, that
yeah.
tune will be. Yeah.
that's right. George Strait.
And Kansas City makes most, there's a plant in Kansas City that makes about 80% of the parts.
So what you're telling me is you guys don't want Americans to have jobs.
Well, we want to put them to work building windmills and wind farms and stuff like that, solar farms.
Can we use a windmill to kill a terrorist?
No, actually, the thing, Pat, is that this whole terrorist hype is overblown, and what it's all about is keeping us psychologically behind the military-industrial complexes, mm-hmm. 8-ball, just the way the financial services industry wants to keep Americans maxed out on their credit cards so that they become wage slaves. It's not an accident that this national security thing is distorted so that we ignore real national security like food security and housing security and health security. And instead, we're running around like little rats in a tunnel.
Right. And endless war is, you know, I was just reading the excerpts from 1984. Endless war is the point.
Yes.
It's not a sidebar. It's the purpose. And the war on terror, even the former commandant or whatever his title is of Gitmo says, close Gitmo, end the war on terror. It's ridiculous. But I don't know that we can expect in a nation where our leaders are still saying we need to build new weapons even though we violate the Non-Proliferation Treaty, I don't know that you're going to get any kind of intelligent action.
Well, you know, I have studied this a little bit, Pat, and my conclusion is that, you know, I grew up in the 50s. I'm 65, and I watched the decline in the cognitive abilities of people in my communities as I moved here and there around the country, as television became more pervasive. And I think that television has rendered Americans incapable of self-governance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think it's too easy to blame television because there really wasn't any in pre-Hitler Germany. I think that there's something that people surrender, regardless of what other exposures they have, where people surrender, and I'm talking control freaks, somebody who wouldn't let you park their car, have all of a sudden, you know, surrendered the role they play in something as big as these missiles or healthcare or education. And maybe that's the point. They just made it so huge. They know they can still park their car. They don't really think that they can define the education system.
Huh. Well, there are people there in Congress in Pennsylvania who are important that need to get on the ball. One of them is Chaka Fata, who is a congressman from Philadelphia. And he is on the Appropriations Committee. He votes for these nuclear weapons, even though he has got a very progressive reputation.
And has he said why? I mean, we should try and get him on the show. Has he said why he supports nuclear weapons? I mean, is he...
He has. The only thing that I have seen him actually say is that he wants to... The nuclear weapons program puts money into traditionally black colleges. They want a pipeline of... they want to have a pipeline of people working for them. And so the weapons program cultivates colleges and identifies colleges as key colleges that they can focus their recruitment efforts on. And so they have money for this. And it's possible that that's what he's talked about in the past, so it's possible there's some money there. But basically, he's in a very strong position as on the Energy and Water Subcommittee. He could really do a lot.
You know, without the Soviet Union, in the absence of another behemoth power, I would think that this nuclear weapons, story would be a hard sell now. I mean, even if with the cluster bombs and the other things, in the as far as I'm concerned, they're nuclear weapons, but the uranium tipped weapon stuff that we've been using, I mean and drone bombing. We don't even have any people involved. Is how can they even sell somebody on the idea of a nuclear weapon? We just don't have a foe. Who are we going to blast to smithereens?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is that a lot of the American people, of the public, doesn't realize the extent of the current nuclear arsenal. They think it's much smaller than it actually is, and about 80% of Americans are perfectly comfortable with us moving towards zero nuclear weapons, in a phased, deliberate way with multilateral, with other nuclear powers also scaling back their arsenals. The message doesn't have any traction in Congress. So we have this interesting situation where the will of Congress defies the will of its constituents.
Well, that's happening all the time. I mean, that happened with gun control, and that happened with the public option for health care.
Health care, sure.
Congress is not paying attention to the people. I mean, if that's not proof of a failed democracy, I don't know what is. Is it 90% of the people in the United States that were polled wanted some sort of background check for weapons?
Yes, but there's another interesting side to it, which is an alignment that is developing. So in the House, where Chaka Fata sits, and he is one of four Democrats on the Energy and Water Subcommittee, and there are 11 people on that subcommittee, and they fund the nuclear weapons program, so he's one of 11 there. That Republican subcommittee drastically cut renewable energy, low-income heating assistance program, and even though they cannibalized those programs, they still also cut the Democrat Obama-proposed big increase in nuclear weapons spending. And so the Republicans are willing somewhat to cut nuclear weapons. In the Senate, I can tell you that over in the corresponding Senate committee, all six Republicans were lined up, I think it was six, don't quote me on that, but were lined up to cut a controversial new bomb, the B-61 bomb, not entirely, but heavily. And so it's kind of teetery. And the problem, the reason Republicans want to cut these things is because, number one, they want to cut government, and so the budget committees hand them smaller pie to cut up.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, as a universally understood, is that these programs are badly managed. And that comes back to the main thing that you started the show
right,
with.
That a third of the weapons are not secured.
Well, yes, on the Air Force is, you know, you talk about the Air Force and people roll their eyes.
Well, okay, so now conspiracy theorist Pat LaMarche, and she's ever growing, that part of my personality just gets bigger and bigger every day. Is this a way for the Republicans, and I don't trust either one of them, the R's or the D's, but is this a way for them to say, you know, obviously, the military and the government don't work. These contractors we have, now those are the ones we can count on. And the next thing you know, they privatize the nuclear weapons.
Right. Well, they have already.
That's already happened.
Oh, love of God. Now that's even more frightening.
So the warhead. 95% privatized.
Yeah, the warhead business is about 95% privatized. So
who in their right mind, all right, I don't need that qualifier. Who thought it was a good idea? Who's the company that has our nuclear?
It started in World War II. It just never stopped.
Wow.
That's the thing. This is World War II all the way running down. We did it in World War II because the companies had the expertise to ramp up production of whatever it was, tanks, whatever. So we said, hey, look, we'll condemn this land. We'll build you a factory. You take it over. You operate it on a cost-plus basis. And by the way, you can't make any cars for the duration because we can't afford the steel and rubber.
Right.
So you'll make this or else. And that's what it was in World War II. But in the nuclear weapons business, it just kept going. It never stopped.
Wow. Okay, so one last question, and I'm sorry we don't have more time. Maybe you guys could come back on the show again in the not-too-distant future. But, when we were running around with the satellite pictures of Iraq, and we were running around saying that's a nuclear scientist and that's a chemical scientist and blah, 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 and we wanted to target them. What in the world makes anybody think that that same vulnerability doesn't happen to the people we have, except instead of wanting to just blow them up, when I use justice or whatever kind of word, but that somebody's going to go and say, hey, I know you do this job for a lot of money. You want a lot more?
Well, a lot of the secrets are just open. You know, there's not that many people. There's a lot of fat in the system.
And so it really wouldn't do you any good to hire one of our scientists because you can just train one of your own fast enough?
Well, there's only a few people who really have those secrets, and it is kind of hard to implement them.
Uh-huh.
And there's so much, you know, you can go on the Internet and learn how to make a nuclear bomb.
Right.
So, I mean, that's all out there.
I don't have fuzzy slippers, so it won't do me any good. Wow.
But Chakafada.
Chakafada. I just opened his site. I'm going to shoot him an email. I'm going to try and get him on the show. If I do get him on the show, I'm going to be giving you guys a call so that maybe we can have all three of you on at the same time.
That would be great.
Peter
and,
Niels.
Save your pennies.
He's going to take a contribution. Is it going to require a contribution? Peter Niels and Greg Mello, thank you so much for taking the time tonight.
Thanks
for
that. Yep. Have a great evening. Well, now, if you're still with the show and you haven't gone home and cut your wrists there and that little bit, it's just so depressing that the United States government believes that we should be buying nuclear weapons to violate the treaties we've signed rather than just paying for education or health care. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show. We'll be back.
For the homeless, for the poor, who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
As they say, politics makes strange bedfellows. Take Anthony Weiner. Please.
But the twisted tweeter of New York City politics is hardly alone in the strange world of oversexed campaigns. And at least he wasn't trying to put his strangeness into law, like Ken Cuccinelli is doing. Ken, the far-right-wing attorney general of Virginia, is now running for governor. But it turns out that he really wants to be Virginia's top sex cop, patrolling people's bedrooms. That state's official tourist slogan brags that Virginia is for lovers. But not if they're into anything icky, snaps Cuccinelli, who's trying hard to reinstate a crimes against nature law, which was declared unconstitutional by a 2003 Supreme Court ruling. Ken loved that law because it bans sex that he finds unnatural, which apparently is anything beyond doing it in the missionary position. In particular, the law declared that it's a crime against nature and the state if any person carnally knows any male or female person by or with the mouth. Yes, that's a ban on oral sex, even by consenting adults, including married adults, in the privacy of their own bedrooms. Cuccinelli, who masquerades as a small government conservative, finds that icky. And by God, he wants his personal hang-up enshrined in law and enforced by government agents. Even sicker, Cuccinelli is trying to disguise this prudish invasion of people's privacy by calling it, get this, the Anti-Child Predators Law. Well, the old law did have a sexual predators provision, but why not keep that and strip out the clearly unconstitutional ban on oral sex in the home? No, says Cuccinelli, who personally intervened to kill a legislative effort to do just that. This is Jim Hightower saying, beware of Ken the Sex Cop or any other politicos who want in your bedroom.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Hey, brothers and sisters. I love doing that. This is not Rick Smith. This is Pat LaMarche for Rick Smith, who is home, I don't know, watering the garden. I don't know what he does on Friday nights. Maybe since the Justin Bieber concert he went to, he's just home having that tattoo freshened. I'm not really sure. But we are going to talk about news. Of course, Talk Radio News joining us every single, every night, but every Friday night with me. And right now, Bob Ney is joining me. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Thank you, Pat. How are you? Good?
I'm fine, Bob. Do you know I'm writing a book?
I wrote one. I'll give you some tips.
I wrote one, too. Mm-hmm. My own tips didn't help.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I could use your tips. Maybe they would be better.
What's this book? What's your book?
Well, I went on a trip with Rick and Carol, his wife, and the three kids, and Brett. Okay. And we all went on a trip around the country, 96 miles, and so I'm writing the book about the trip.
Neat.
It's fun, and we went to all these labor history places. So now I am up to my very red eyeballs in history reading every day and writing now because I've actually begun writing the book, which is making it really a lot more fun. And so I don't know anything that's going on.
Oh, you're so better off. You're a happy person. When I go to India, I know nothing. Except yeah. I drink tea.
You know? Oh, well, tea's nice. Now, how often do you go to India? And that's a trip I could go along on.
It's great. And we're going to take some people over.
Really?
Some of Ellen Ratner's friends, sure. So you're more than welcome. It's a bargain basement trip. We go up into northern India, Dharamsala, where the Dalai Lama is. And I go over about, I'll be here 3 months. I'll go over for a month, sometimes 2 months, and then come back. I stagger it.
Do you get to chat up the Dalai Lama?
I actually do. Yeah. And Ellen's met him, yes. And I saw the Dalai Lama about June 15th, I think it was.
Wow.
Yes, and I got to wave to him. But I've had a private audience before. It's a lot of fun.
How wonderful.
Great guy.
Hey, I kid you not, I would be so...
Yeah, I'll let you know. We're going to put a group together.
My passport's in good standing. Yes, I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Wonderful.
And then you don't have to worry about news.
I don't. Well, I don't right now because I have Bob Ney.
Well, I can bring you the bad news.
Yeah.
As a reporter one time told me when I was in Congress, he said, I complained he didn't write about some really nice bipartisan thing we did with Steny Hoyer. And he said, Congressman, we don't report when the planes land. So
right.
A lot of planes haven't landed in D.C. today.
They should be reporting the good news now, though, because it is so much more rare.
Oh, yes. While the Congress is on vacation, they're screaming at the president on vacation, but they're on 5-week vacation. So a little bit longer than the president, I would think. The NSA, which has been the tip of the tongue in the news, has admitted through internal documents that they have broken some other rules. Now, it's a debate. What they did, there's an area code for Egypt, ironically, with Egypt in the news, but the area code is 2020. So they typed in 202, which is Washington, D.C.'s area code, and they started to pull down, I know.
Dennis the Menace running the NSA?
I mean, the government already had my stuff from Alberto Gonzalez, so I didn't have to worry. They had everything. But they were pulling down everybody else's stuff, and then they went and accidentally pulled down green card holders who had communicated with people overseas. If you're a green card holder, you come from overseas, so they pulled that down.
That wasn't accidental. Is anyone buying this accidental crap?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because what they said is that didn't have to be reported. It wasn't a violation. It was an accident. It was a clerical error.
Remember that next time I accidentally take $40,000 from a bank.
Oh, yeah, when I accidentally have a dinner with Jack Abramoff. I told him it was an accident. They didn't believe it. It was an accident. Nine times. But the point of the NSA thing is that I couldn't help that. Sorry.
That's excellent.
The NSA, it has to. It's not going to get its act together. So Congress is going to have to do something. The president made some statements, but that was these are serious incidents, and they have,
except nobody cares.
Well, that's the other thing too.
Where's Senator Irwin? From the Watergate hearings, where's the moral? Forget compass. Do we even have like something, approaching maybe a buoy in the ocean?
Well, I had two friends of mine just this week, one Republican, one Democratic, and both of them said, "Well, Bob, because they asked my opinion, and they said, "Well, Bob, we have to be kept safe."
Oh, for God's sake.
Knowing what you watch on pay-per-view is not keeping America safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are definitions of what you go after and, what you don't, and the FISA court's not been watched. So this isn't the end of this news. There's going to be more things dug up. The big news of the day, which is just serious and it's tragic, really, is Egypt. And they had a day of what they call Day of Anger, Day of Rage. The Muslim Brotherhood wanted people to go to the streets. There's been additional shootings, of course. And when it comes to Egypt, nobody's really looking at some statistics. 25% food inflation costs. There's been a decline of 75% tourism. I'm shocked it's even
still going at all. Yeah,
and I think the unemployment rate just like doubled and was searing up to like 50%. And so I'm arguing that at some point in time, people that don't care about either side are going to be in the streets because they're angry and they're going to be hungry. So this thing's just going to get continuously worse.
Well, I spent a couple of weeks in Egypt in 2008. My son went to the American University in Cairo.
Oh,
imagine those
place.
Programs aren't working
great
right
place.
Now either. Yeah, it was wonderful. And there were a lot. I mean, I had a lot of – I actually wrote from there, too. I started in Israel, went into Egypt, and I wrote for a paper back here. And I grieve when I think of this because it's such a loving country, really.
Wasn't
that
great?
Yeah. Yeah, it was wonderful.
And we had Americans were accepted. We had tourism, and it dealt with Israel. It had an embassy. I mean, it was just a great place. You're right. And I think a lot of people that haven't been there, they don't realize it. It was I call it a normal type of environment. I didn't have great fear over there.
I had no fear. And that word that we're all supposed to be horrified by, a woman traveling the Middle East. I had absolutely no fear at all in any of my travels.
Well, that's really great. It's good you went there before,
I went into the Palestinian territory, across through those sniper's nests through the wall.
Oh, I did too. I went over to Jericho, went to Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
I did that.
Wow. That's
I used to live in Iran during the revolution.
We've got to get a beer sometime, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
This sounds like,
Oh,
maybe while we're in India. Okay. So is the U.S. going to have a role in this, and have we already had a role? Is that when we were doing the 202 instead of the 20, were we really actually sticking our fingers in that problem and maybe?
No, I don't think we were. I mean, they had a change of government. We thought it was okay, and it wasn't okay, and they had the coup, but we don't say it's a coup. 1961, the Congress passed a law, a foreign assistance law. If it's a coup, you cut off all the money.
I see.
Now, President Obama's went all the way except saying the word coup.
Yeah.
And, he stopped a military obviously tests we were going to have with Egypt and practices. He can't do that right now, but he hasn't said it's a coup. Once he says coup, all the money cuts off. But I do have to, I would be remiss being a former member of Congress if I didn't tell you candidly, just talk about the money to Egypt. It really isn't food and books and such things that comes through most of the other sources. The majority of this is military money. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, if we don't deliver the products to Egypt, we pay the defense contractors anyway.
Oh, well, then that's even better, isn't it?
So you can bet members of Congress with the jobs in their districts are out there saying, oh, no, hey, you've got to, you know, we've got to get this foreign aid going. So there's a little bit of that whole military complex deal that's going down there with defense contracts.
I wish El Cid was our Secretary of State, because then he could load the catapults with bread instead of bricks and all
that's
that stuff.
True.
But you know, that was the one of the many fascinating things about going to Egypt was you go to the Egyptian Military Museum and the first display is a chariot. I mean, you know, they've had a military for 4,000, 6,000 years.
That.
You know, and I hope that everything gets straight up. But is this like, just to ask you one more historical perspective question, is this like the five French revolutions? I mean, France, when democracy was trying to take hold in France, it just kept happening, 1789 and then over again and over again and over again and over again. And there were four or five French revolutions until, you know, they made up their mind to accept it.
It's going to take a while, but plus our version of democracy and their version of democracy, they've been under kings and dictators for 5,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so their version's a little bit different than ours, because we say coup, but at the end of the day, the Muslim Brotherhood came in, they did a Sharia law, did away with the Constitution, and people said, no, no. Now, over here, I compare it to the same thing. If we had a president elected who said, by the way, watch me rip up the Constitution, come on, there'd be pitchforks in the street. So
we could hope.
Different.
It's, you know, they have ripped up the Constitution. They just didn't say it. So we don't have the pitchforks in the street.
They shredded that in the Bush administration. Alberto Gonzalez took the scissors to that one.
Yeah.
But Egypt remains a terrible, terrible problem. So right now, America's just tiltering back and forth on what to do, and it's an internal situation with them. I would be remiss if I didn't get in the fact of the Department of Defense and Chuck Hagel. He's come up with a change for the sexual assault cases. Frankly, it's kind of, what should I say, it's okay in the sense that nobody's done anything about this horrible situation for a decade, so he's doing something, but it's kind of a light version. Senator Gildebrand from New York, she is not accepting. She appreciates what's been done, but she's not accepting that. She has 46 senators. They want more. They want to stop this whole chain of command where it goes through nine people to be considered action.
You know, I have such a, I actually had a bunch of stories tonight talking about this because I've been, you know, the two or three big cases, with the general being court-martialed and all that other stuff, first, fourth court-martial of a general in however many years. And, you know, we have such a messed up morality, and I know I have this Pollyanna side of me that I really wish would have a little more control over the rest of me, but, we're talking about an organization whose purpose is murder. Now, you might think it's justified murder, and someone might say, well, we had to go and do this. We had to drone bomb civilians. We've got to do it. But this is a reprehensible, disgusting, just appalling thing that we ask people to do. And we ask them to get in a mindset where they will do this horrible thing. And then we turn around and say, but really, respect each other's rights about this other, you know, sexuality stuff. I just think, how do you turn your brain on and off that way?
Well, you know, you raise a point that nobody really dares talk about, but you raise a good point because it's about, and there's men involved in sexual assault of males. So this isn't just, you know, the females, but nobody talks about the other side of it. There, you know, a lot of embarrassment to it. But at the end of the day, it's a control factor too, and people are taught to seize control, take control. So it's a culture within the military where, you know, can't accept this. I understand, and you know that too, but you just make a very, very good point nobody really wants to talk about.
Well, thanks. But I know, and it just flabbergasts me. And when I speak to other people, especially sometimes some pretty fabulous feminists I know, they're like, you're muddying the conversation. I'm like, I don't think I am. You know, I'm going to give someone all the power to order you to murder someone. but I'm not going to give them the power to order you to give them a, you know, the thing he ordered the women to give him.
Well, it's a, like I said, there's a lot of control factor psychological in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got to do something with this, and they've got to, this has been, this isn't a new issue. This has been whispered and talked about for, since Tailhook.
Yeah.
And, so finally, I think, you know, Chuck Hagel and the administration are doing something with the issue on a serious vein. And again, Senator from New York, she is going to, I think, push for more.
And Bob Ney, you brought up a point that I think is very important to say, that it speaks to a whole pile of the whole gender stuff anyway, which is it's embarrassing to talk about men on men, but what the heck, we can all talk about men on women. Mm-hmm. Hey, nothing embarrassing about that.
Well, they don't report, and that's the thing. Mm-hmm. The men are, well, I mean, some women won't report either,
mm-hmm.
but we're now finding out a lot of the men have just not reported this, and there's cases now going back to the Vietnam War, because a lot of people haven't, you know, well, they just haven't talked about the whole issue in the military of the assault. It was just kept so under wraps for years.
Right. And obviously also in just mainstream society. No one wants to talk about abuse if it's, I mean, that's the part of every kind of abuse. Even if it's just socioeconomic abuse, it's so humiliating. You don't want to admit to being the abused.
And on another lighter note, I'm sure we're running towards time here, but mm-hmm. they're giving out Doritos at the Seattle Hemp Festival. The police are. Yeah.
What about chocolate? No brownies. Just.
I can't make this up. The police are giving out Doritos because of munchies at the Seattle Hemp Festival.
Well, you know, I had seen a quick headline that the police were enjoying the people at the hemp festival. Now, is there actual marijuana at the festival, or is this just hemp? This just
industrial
hemp.
Well, you can't give it away. I don't know, somebody's trying to bring some marijuana, the largest joint in the world or whatever. Of course, I don't think you'll see the politicians from other states going there. You know, Clinton didn't inhale, I never exhaled. So, you know, no politician will be nearing that thing from Congress, at least.
And then, of course, it was George W. Bush who inhaled and exhaled so many times he can't remember one.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Colorado, the only state right now, though, right, where the recreational use of marijuana is legal.
Yes, Seattle has, you know, I should be more up on the law. Seattle has the hemp law now, but Colorado, I think, is the quote, wide open, you know, where it's legal, period. Uh-huh. I never thought it would pass in that state for some reason. I don't know.
Well, you know, Colorado's such a mixed bag. You've got the wild conservatives and then the wacky fun folks.
And then the coarse beer people, they all drink, so.
That's true. Hey, Bob Ney of Talk Radio News, thanks so much for
spending some
time with us tonight.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I'm Pat. I'm in for Rick Smith, and we'll be back with more of the Rick Smith Show coming right up.
Never you will look back again. You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. From all things I behold. Now we are defenseless.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
As they say, politics makes strange bedfellows. Take Anthony Weiner. Please. But the twisted tweeter of New York City politics is hardly alone in the strange world of oversexed campaigns. And at least he wasn't trying to put his strangeness into law, like Ken Cuccinelli is doing. Ken, the far-right-wing attorney general of Virginia, is now running for governor. But it turns out that he really wants to be Virginia's top sex cop, patrolling people's bedrooms. That state's official tourist slogan brags that Virginia is for lovers. But not if they're into anything icky, snaps Cuccinelli, who's trying hard to reinstate a crimes against nature law, which was declared unconstitutional by a 2003 Supreme Court ruling. Ken loved that law because it bans sex that he finds unnatural, which apparently is anything beyond doing it in the missionary position. In particular, the law declared that it's a crime against nature and the state if any person carnally knows any male or female person by or with the mouth. Yes, that's a ban on oral sex, even by consenting adults, including married adults, in the privacy of their own bedrooms. Cuccinelli, who masquerades as a small government conservative, finds that icky. And by God, he wants his personal hang-up enshrined in law and enforced by government agents. Even sicker, Cuccinelli is trying to disguise this prudish invasion of people's privacy by calling it, get this, the Anti-Child Predators Law. Well, the old law did have a sexual predators provision. But why not keep that and strip out the clearly unconstitutional ban on oral sex in the home? No, says Cuccinelli, who personally intervened to kill a legislative effort to do just that. This is Jim Hightower saying, beware of Ken the Sex Cop or any other politicos who want in your bedroom.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
And so tonight, to you, the great silent majority of my fellow Americans, I ask for your support.
I'll vote for him. That's what I want. I want a president who knows he's a crook. I am not a crook. And believes in the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and OSHA. Who knew Richard Nixon would one day be the liberal of our time? This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith. I have so much fun on Fridays. It's my favorite Friday. It's like, well, when I was a kid, Love American Style was on Friday nights, and spending the evening with Brett Benatelli is just that good. It's just that fabulous. It's just the Friday night lineup of fun and frolic. And there's a couple of stories left that we can touch on for just a minute. Gloria Steinem, Medal of Freedom. She's getting the Medal of Freedom for the president. I think that's fabulous. Way to go. All right, you got one in the win column today there, President Obama. I know I'm a harsh critic, and I want you to be the man that you were promising you were going to be. Maybe not surprising everybody isn't so happy about Gloria Steinem's new award. Who's not so happy? The Roman Catholic Church. Catholic Church says it takes a killer to know a killer, and they have lumped Gloria Steinem and President Obama into that category because of the choice discussion. Not because of drone bombings. Because that'd be, and as far as I know, Gloria Steinem doesn't use drone bombings, but the president does. But no, they've criticized the president for awarding Gloria Steinem with the Medal of Freedom because they think she's a horrible. It's the alive children that she has been fighting for, and their moms, and getting them an equal footing in the workplace, and letting women work at the same job as men. Which, oh, I guess that wouldn't work in the Catholic Church. I love it when Rick's here and he and I discuss these things because, he and I are on the exact same side when it comes to how strongly the Catholic Church, especially the Catholic Church bishops, have stuck up for the poor and the hungry. But, sexism thing has got to end. Anyway, what else has happened? Bradley Manning has not been sentenced yet. But Army prosecutors today were getting one last chance to present evidence that Private First Class Bradley Manning deserves a long prison sentence. They've downgraded his potential for a long prison sentence from 136 years to just 90, which means if Bradley Manning comes from a family that has been eating yogurt in the mountains of Japan, he might live to see sunlight if he lives to be 111 or something. But 90 years now. Government is saying that they may call witnesses at the sentencing hearing, and I'm unsure whether or not they did that. That was today, I think, but he has not yet been sentenced, and we wait to see what's going to happen with that. And then, I just hope somebody uses their head somewhere along the way. Here's an interesting person who probably should be locked up and the key thrown away just because she's such a horrible human being. Albrail Denise Winkler from Vernal, Utah. I don't think we went to Vernal. Vernal, Utah, convinced her local community that her child had leukemia and accepted more than $3,000 in donations. Vernal police officials said that they contacted the Division of Child and Family Services about medical records regarding the child, and none of them suggest that she has cancer. Some of the people donated money actually do have children with cancer, which makes this even more of a horrible thing. And they interviewed the child, the police interviewed the child, and the child believed that she had cancer because her mommy told her she did. How do these people just look at themselves in the mirror? I guess it doesn't matter. They don't really care. Now, this sort of details spill out in a rare court-martial. I mentioned this earlier when we were talking with the folks from the cable news. An Illicit and Volatile Affair that spanned two war zones in four countries, a married general. Now, this story is ridiculous because if you're in that kind of power and you know that you're in the United States military and you know that you're a target, why in the world would you do these things? That alone is stupid enough. I personally don't think that anybody's sex life is anybody's business. I don't care what people do. But I know this has got extenuating circumstances because they were subordinate officers and allegedly he ordered them to perform different sex acts. Again, like I said earlier, we order people to go kill and be killed. So it's kind of interesting that we don't think these people have God complexes to begin with. But the person who wrote the story, Craig Whitlock, who wrote the story for, what's the newspaper? The Washington Post. Craig Whitlock of the Washington Post wrote this sentence. The married general couldn't stay away from a captain on his staff. Those, when you're a reporter, those are the sentences you live to write. Because the whole thing is technically accurate. But when it's a sex scandal, the married general couldn't stay away from a captain on his staff. Ugh. The captain called her boss Papa Panda Sexy Pants. She called him Papa Panda Sexy Pants. They had a 3-year entanglement, and they say it has ended disastrously for both of them. Brigadier General Jeffrey A. Sinclair, an Army Ranger and paratrooper, stands accused of forcible sodomy, adultery, and other charges that could send him to prison. Prosecutors say that he abused his command authority by sleeping with a subordinate officer because he had the ability to order her to do things. And, you know, all that aside, the fact where he allegedly ordered her to perform certain sexual acts. It's remarkable. What was that name again? Papa Panda Sexy Pants. I'm pretty sure Marianne Parks, a friend of mine and Brett's, has drawn a picture of Papa Panda Sexy Pants. I think I can get that cartoon up on my Facebook page, Pat LaMarche, if you want to check it out. By the way, Rick Smith only off for tonight. He will be back Monday. I'll be back next Friday. I'm here every Friday, but Rick is here the rest of the week. He's trying to spend some time with his family in the summertime. Just amazing. And then that story, of course, nowhere near as amazing as the story about the colonel from the Canadian police who pled guilty to 88 charges of sexual everything from deviance to assault to the last crime he pled guilty to, murder. This guy took his very serious crimes to the absolute limit. I think we should, if this show hasn't told us anything tonight, we've got $500 billion going to nuclear weapons. We're charging $80,000 to a guy who just wants to run for the United States Senate and he believes that the people who signed his papers have a right to have their signature count. I mean, we are telling Patriot coal miners that they can't have health care probably into their entire retirement, and yet we reject H.R. 676, and we can't even get anybody to even talk about the idea of Medicare for all, which would be so easy to implement. We just, like, give it to everybody. I mean, everybody has a Social Security number within days of being born. Bam, that's how you join the national health system. That's how they do it in just about every intelligent country on the planet. Just amazing. Another fun Friday evening. I hope you have a great time. Thinking of my friend Reverend Gerald Olson up there in Bangor, Maine, who is fasting today for the Gitmo detainees. I did it with him last week. You can read a story about what happened at the Huffington Post. My story about it is at the Huffington Post. Just Google Gitmo detainees. Anyway, thanks, Brett. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.